It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, and Alex are here, plus my little friend, and we are going to talk about the latest Apple news, including a tour of the first public beta of iOS 12 and Mojave. They came out just now. Stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 616, recorded Tuesday, June 26th, 2018. We're keeping Shatner. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. And by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers. For $75 off your first order, visit Molecule.com and enter the promo code MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Apple news with the heroes of the Apple news scene, Andy Anatko from Anatko.com. Hey, Andrew.
Hello.
Good to see you.
The secret is I'm always angry.
Oh, you're not. You're the sweetest guy in showbiz.
Thank you. I say things like that just to provoke compliments.
He's very good at it. Renee Ritchie is also here from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Leo. I have not slept since public beta, so excuse me if I just stare at you.
We are in public beta land. And yes. And we're going to talk about that in a second, also from the Pixel Core, Alex Lindsay.
Hello, hello.
In studio, and you brought Malachi and Isabella.
They're hidden back there.
Where are they?
Right there.
Hey, kids. Oh, they're running the board.
Well, that's nice. Why aren't they on the show?
That's nice. They're on the TriCaster today.
That's good. They're resetting the Blade server, saying, you know what? You get a lot more bandwidth if you just take this cache and move it onto this system.
You know, you can move your seats. Can you see your dad anyway?
VR morphing now.
They have bad seats. They have the obstructed view on seats. So we'll get them a better seat. Renee, did Mojave public beta ship today? Because yesterday...
Right before the show.
Dag nabbit. I guess I'll be downloading that. Yesterday, the public beta of iOS 12 shipped. So before we start singing either of their praises, the requisite... Don't do this! You're crazy if you do this! Don't do it on a production machine! It's not ready for prime time, etc.
I would say...
device or drive.
You got to be careful, especially if you need GPS.
GPS stopped working in iOS?
Not that it doesn't work.
It's unreliable?
Have you noticed that, Renee?
I have not had that problem. However, I believe since iPhone 10 and iPhone 8, Apple is much more aggressively power managing it. And if things go wrong, the GPS goes wonky. So I've heard a lot of people complain about it.
It knows where I am.
It thinks I live like now after the public beta install. It feels like it thinks that I'm living a couple miles from my house.
Oh, that's not good.
The privacy feature.
I've had exactly. a couple of timeouts where it just sat there and unresponsive. In fact, the first thing that happened when it rebooted, it sat unresponsive for a little bit, mm-hmm. but then it came back. I've had a couple of resprings. So yeah. It's a beta. It's a pre-release version of iOS 12.
I have it on my iPad, and I put it on another one of my iPhones. The iPhone is actually probably less reliable, probably because there are so many more radios involved. But it's stable-ish on the iPad, so I don't know. If you're not a daily driver, it's important. My iPad is an essential part of my lifestyle sort of person. I'd risk the public beta, but definitely not the phone because...
I will say that overall, it's a heck of a lot of fun. So, yeah.
We're doing the stop, don't okay, do it okay, first.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Then we're going to say how awesome it is.
Yeah, so
I'm pointing out my experiences on the iPad just so that when they hear me say, for God's, unless you're never in a position where your iPhone needs your iPhone to hail a car, make a payment, make a phone call, receive a phone call or a text, know where you are. I mean, if you just use it as a music player, your iPhone, great. Go ahead and take the risk.
The issue about putting it on the iPad is that you don't get the Memojis.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes, they are true depth only.
Which and, are amazing.
And so you need an iPhone 10 to do it. And it's poor Megan put it on her 6S, and she can't do them emoji. So let me just run through them emoji a little bit, because this is the awesomest thing ever. So,
you know, now, when Renee, they announced it, I was like, not, oh, this is stupid.
Tell me if I'm not doing this right, because I think you have to launch messages to do it, right?
You can edit it in messages, yeah.
If you want to create a memoji, you go to messages, and then you go where you would add an emoji, but you can, there'll be a plus sign that says new memoji. Now, what's nice is you can create multiple memojis.
Yeah.
I have a couple, but let's create a new one real quick, so just give you the idea of the process. I immediately posed for it, and then I realized, oh, it's not looking at me. It is, it's not a picture. You're just going to say, well, this is what I look like.
For some reason, character creator.
Yeah. Choose the skin color and the freckles. I have no freckles. Hairstyle. Now, I was good. You know, I said on iOS, here's the lady's hair. No, we're not. There's gender neutral here. So
yeah, all of us gender neutral.
I'm going to have cornrows today. Head shape, round. No matter what you do, you're going to look like a baby.
So the age options are annoying for me because they're basically 3-year-old, 5-year-old, and 7-year-old. Yeah. That's what you get.
You don't get a lot of choices. It isn't designed to look like you. It's designed to look like a caricature.
You get a real Housewives of California look with the absolutely plastic smooth skin and only there's more range of facial expression in the eyebrows. So that's a difference.
What I suspect is people will try less to make it look like them. And maybe create a character, right, that they might want to be.
What they feel like, not necessarily what they look like.
Well, and because you could make many of them, you could totally do that.
You can duplicate yours, too, and add hats. Like, can make variants for your hats and your sunglasses.
That's right, exactly. I liked having the hipster. So there we go. I've got a little Kangol on.
That'll
now
get
I'm
you
done.
Such good coffee service.
and of course, the first thing I did was stick out my tongue. You've done all this, Renee. You did this at
WWDC. Yeah, it's binary right now. You can't do tongue gymnastics. It's an in-out state only right now. There's no tongue tracking.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. It's just in and out.
You're going to sound like I'm joking.
I made myself the She-Hulk this morning.
Yeah. Now, one more. Oh, look, I like that.
See, that's the Amanda Connor version.
I think as you get more, this is more advanced emojiing,
yes.
Where you decide, it doesn't have to look like me. One other tip, if you want to do it in video, you go to video and then obviously reverse, and then tap the star, which is a new feature in the video. And now you can choose a memoji, among other things. You could also do it in FaceTime. And then you get this really weird effect where it's you on your body in your setting, which is really weird. And the other thing it took me a while to figure out, Renee, is, well, how do I get to the camera from here? You press that little X, and now you're in the camera, and I can record something. Hey, babies, welcome to Mac. Mike Wiggly! And now I have that. Now, can I save that?
You can send it.
I can send it.
I think sending
would
send
it and then save it, yeah.
So you have to send it to somebody.
Or you can send it. Well, that's a is that a share and then you just share it to your photos?
And by the way, when I do edit, I don't have the emoji in here anymore, which is kind of a bummer. So you kind of have to send it. Now, unfortunately, poor Megan has been getting all my memojis because I couldn't figure out. Oh, and here's the new emoji. What are they?
You can also add AR stickers, Leo, so that you can, for example, enjoy a tasty Tim Hortons beverage.
Yum, yum, yum. That looks like Tim Cook.
And they link to anchor points. So if you move around, the straw, for example, will stay in your mouth.
That's cool.
The dog will stay on your shoulder.
Oh, that's really cool. And you can use it in FaceTime.
Yeah.
I think are we all kind of over the animojis now that we have the memojis?
Yes.
The T-Rex is kind of cool, though. I still like the new T-Rex.
But why wouldn't you want to be you or something like you?
I know. I
a caricature.
Yeah. I think that the memojis have taken over the animojis.
Yeah.
You can do the big reveal. Like Tim Cook, during the announcement, if you look carefully, there was a tiger in the top corner. Oh. And then at the last second, he switched to Tim Cook, and then they introduced
him. That's funny.
So you can do that as the epic reveal.
Oh, that's hysterical. To me, though, the really, and I am really thrilled about this, most exciting thing, I mean, there's the new screen time and all that stuff, which works. Stack notifications, that's awesome.
Yep.
But to me, the biggest, most exciting part, Siri shortcuts, baby. You go to Siri and search. Now, at first I thought, oh, it's going to be all canned. But no, it's been watching what I've been doing. And so I'm able to create shortcuts because it's keeping an eye on things that have happened. So, for instance, I went to my wallet, opened up my American Express card, and then I was able to make a shortcut. So when I say Amex, my wallet, I don't have it on here. It's only on the phone. But my wallet will open up.
Yeah.
By the way, I created that on the phone, but it did propagate to my iPad. So your shortcuts will go to all your iOS devices.
You can ask your HomePod for it now. We'll see what it does.
Oh, my God. What would it do? That'll be interesting.
Just say, can't, yeah, probably can't do Amex on here, Leo.
Let's try it here on my phone, and we'll see. So Amex. Oh, yeah, it did it. It launched my Amex card. Don't worry, I probably shouldn't show my even my four digits, but that's really cool. It launched the American Express card from the wallet.
And I notice you have Workflow installed, Leo, so you can make workflows, go to the Workflow app, then go to Siri shortcut settings and assign shortcuts to the Workflow app before you get the shortcuts app.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So, but that means you really have now unlimited capabilities because you can launch Workflow, create a workflow, and then have it be a Siri, add your
The Workflow app will actually be will just be renamed shortcuts when it's ready to ship. Yeah. So all that'll still be there working for you.
Have they added capabilities to Workflow?
No, I think they're keeping Workflow fairly static now so that it works the way you're familiar with it, and they're adding the voice layer to it. But it does get a lot of benefits by being Apple technology now. So, for example, for years, people would just – they wanted Workflow to work in the background like a system app. Now it can. So you're basically getting voice-activated background-running workflows anytime you want them.
Wow.
And that's a huge order of magnitude power user improvement.
Yeah. That's why I was saying that on the iPad, where there isn't a whole lot of downside in losing a feature that could threaten your life at some point, Workflows is not only a really huge time saver, but also I think that when it launches, it's going to take about a month and a half for you to for the system to have automatically built up a library of the most kick butt workflows for you automatically, the stuff that you're going to really rely on. And why not get started on that so that you can hit the ground running when the real thing gets released in September?
I'm just really stoked about this. To me, this is actually a lot of what Apple does is kind of adding features to the iPhone that others had or apps had, like the Measure app. Memojis is unique. I don't think. I mean, but there's been Bitmoji, so it's not fully unique. There is some automation capability on Android. There's Tasker, but it is much more fidgety and complicated. Siri shortcuts to me is an actual breakthrough in how you use your device. I'm very excited about it.
And again, I think I talked about this last week, but I think that's what Apple does more. That's their main innovation is they get things out of the way. You know, they get it so that you're actually more likely to use it. It doesn't mean that they always get it right, but there's still a lot of complicated things. But I think that there is they're taking something that we've already seen work over and over again, and then they're just carving away some of the stuff that gets in between us and action. And I think this is going to be exciting.
I think it's huge. Yeah.
Especially as you start tying it into Internet of Things. Like, this is, you know, I'm going to...
Yeah, because all your HomeKit stuff will work with this too.
Right.
And as you pointed out, Renee... HomePod also will get these shortcuts.
Yeah, HomePod, Apple Watch has them in the Siri shortcut. I was talking to Brian Romilly, who's a big voice first advocate this week, and he's going to use it like it's basically HyperCard for voice.
Wow.
It's going to be his new basic programming language. I think that's where a lot of people are going to have a lot of introduction.
And he'll
what
use,
automation can really do.
To do that, he'll use Workflow?
Yeah, and it's going to become the shortcuts app, and there'll be a gallery of it. You can go through and add stuff. You can add things to it. You can take things out. You can... And it's going to be accessible to people in a way that things haven't been since like the HyperCard era, I think.
I love the idea that you can make HomePod more useful.
Yeah.
Because it's really not very useful. Except
you're essentially, instead of adding all this was like, I think, an internal debate in Apple. Like, do they just add a ton of skills like Alexa did and then have you go through lists and add them? Or do they base it on the apps you've already got? Because that's a good indicator of the functionality you want. And it creates a much more manageable subset of skills for you to start with. And they chose that approach. So now you download apps. And as you use them, all these skills will sort of propagate. And then you can weave them together whichever way you want with Workflow. And it's always a manageable list that you can sort of dip your toe into step by step.
Yeah. What I think that it makes this really such a solid feature is that this isn't something, yes, you can string together your own workflows, but kind of like how nice the assistant is in Google Photos, where you didn't know that it'll just basically make decisions on its own, saying, "Hey, look, we came up with this really cool collage based on your trip to Ellis Island last weekend. If you want, press this button and you can add it to your library. Otherwise, we'll forget this all happened." The idea of just having this little pane where you don't have to learn how to create workflows, you don't even have to be aware that this feature exists. It's just that there will be this magical box that elves sometimes fill with really cool shortcuts customized to your daily flow. And all I have to do is simply say, "Hey, that's really useful. Why don't you let me use that on a permanent basis?" That's how you get power into the hands of people that are using a phone or a computer like an appliance, as opposed to like a productivity tool, something that they have to learn how to use.
That's the most amazing thing about this for me, is it covers such a broad spectrum. You will have the background workflow voice triggers for the nerdiest of nerds. But for people who are just, they've never felt computers were accessible, they'll get a little indicator on their home screen saying, "Do you want your usual coffee order?" And it'll save them having to literally spelunk through, like, I don't know, "Where's the app? Here's a list of things I can order. There it is." And it saves them so much interface action. Yep. That it's push interface. Again, the dawn of push interface. You don't have to go find the things you want. The things you want come to you.
Did the new iOS add the reminder that tells you when to leave for your meeting?
Yes.
And if
you're late, it'll text, like, it'll say, "Text Alex, I'm running late for my meeting."
Well, the funny thing was, is that I got a message after I installed it. The alarm went off and said, "Your meeting is at this time." And I was like, why is it giving me the alarm 50 minutes before, 50 or 52 minutes before?
It knows how long it takes, Alex.
It turns out that I should have left right. Here's the crazy thing. Based on the traffic,
right?
Because normally it was only 35 minutes away,
right?
But it was 52 minutes that day. It sent me an alarm. You need to go now.
I should point out that Android has done this for some time.
I know, but
however, it is a great feature. But what Android doesn't do is say, "And would you like to text your attendees?"
It'll also give you options. Like if it's a phone number, it'll say, "Would you like to just call into the meeting because you won't get there on time?" Or would you like to text the person?
Wow.
Yeah. I would like to see.
This really does indicate the sophistication of it. What Alex is talking about is such a great indicator of how our relationship with our technology is changing. Where I've had that situation with the Waze app so many times, where when I was, for the first couple of years, maybe 3 years, if it told me to do something, take a cockamamie route I've never used before, I would say, "Oh God, what do you think about Waze?" And I would just take my normal route. Now I'll say, "I don't know why you're telling me to, for God's sake, get off I-95 right now."
Yeah.
I'm simply going to trust that I'm going to believe in a higher power is up there to protect me. And so that's how it works.
I often refer to it as the crazy Google girl. You know, like, she'll tell me to do all kinds of crazy things, and I've just learned to just like listening to my wife, I've just learned to do what I'm told.
For a long time, too. But that's what's interesting about, to me, Siri shortcuts is that, and by the way, one additional thing, they've also dodged the privacy issue, Renee, because letting the apps use what they know about you means Apple doesn't have to spy on you. So
yes.
Google, in order to do this, has to kind of watch when you go to work, look at your calendar and stuff. Apple just says, "No, we'll let the apps do it. If they have something to say, we'll let them say it through Siri."
There is a downside. So like the apps have to donate functionality to the Siri system. The Siri system, based on your behavior, will surface it for you.
Right.
The downside is that because of the way Google and Amazon do it, they're essentially using web API. So they get the full functionality of every service immediately because all the big services have APIs. Where for Siri shortcuts, developers are going to have to go in and do the work of surfacing what they think is the most important behaviors to the system. So it's more work for developers, more work for services, but it's better privacy protection for you.
Right.
So you might not get as many or as much initially, but what you get will respect your privacy and won't be used for any projects that you might not approve of.
Right, right. And there are a lot of other features to iOS 12. And, you know, as I use it, I'm sure these will all come up. I, for instance, just signed into my workflow started workflow on iPhone. It says, "Do you want to use Sync?" And I said, "Yeah." And it says, "Well, you need to create an account for that." So I said, "Okay." iOS 12 not only filled in the password, a strong password, but then remembered it. And so that's going to really – I'm thrilled to see that. And not everybody's using, you know, our sponsor LastPass or 1Password. But This is going to really encourage people to make unique, long, strong passwords.
Yeah, and there's huge things for them too. So first of all, you now get an intercept, because previously if you gave anyone your device, you gave them your passwords and your wallet. And now Face ID and Touch ID will intercept before it will fill any password. So it's much more secure. But also there's a password manager API. So if you prefer to use LastPass or Dashlane or 1Password, all they have to do is provide a hook and it will autofill based on those instead of based off iCloud Keychain. So you can keep using the app you're always used to using.
And I think it's so important for us from a security perspective to get away from to get to biometric as fast as possible and preferably multiple biometrics. I mean, I'd love to get to a point where it's looking for the two-part authentication is two different biometrics rather than, you know, silly codes, you know, that are much easier to. Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, we keep short codes, we keep easy codes, we keep all those things because
for convenience.
Because it's hard to remember them and you forget them and you get locked out. And so, you know, getting that biometric process working, I think, you know, because every time I'm somewhere, you know, that I don't want to necessarily show me typing in my code, I worry about it. And I'm just like, I just wish the thing would just look at my face and just go, okay.
You're essentially getting that with this because they're using biometrics on the local device and then generating a random string of numbers to give the site, because you can never replace your own biometrics if they get that data. So it's almost like Apple Pay, where they're just creating random tokens, storing that with the site, and using your biometrics to unlock them for you.
Absolutely, and I think that it's the right thing with the workflows or with the shortcuts. I still, as an old Shake user, wish that that you could do a real nodal connection. Like, when I say this, I want all these operations to happen and just be able to drag the things in that I want to do and connect them all to it. And some of them might be dependent on the other ones, and go do this, then grab the information from there and put it into here and then do this. And I think that for the real geeks, I think that would be I think that as a programming language, it's the halfway between shortcuts and Swift is kind of a nodal programming interface that would be easy to use to say, there's all these things that I want to do. I'm not a programmer, but I want a little bit more visibility over what I'm going to do than what I'm going to get with shortcuts or with Automator or other things like that, where I can tie it all in. I think it would be.
And there's no variables yet, so you can't say order me 2 pizzas, order me 4 pizzas. You have to have a separate shortcut for each of the different things you want to do. But version 1.
So what else should we talk about? What other nice new features in iOS 12? Maybe something that I haven't realized is in there yet.
I mean, there's a couple of things that are just really good quality of life improvements. Like Face ID, it will no longer fail hard after one attempt and make you do passcode.
Oh, thank God.
You can just keep swiping up over and over again to get it to retry.
Oh, I did notice that, by the way. I noticed that last night. That was a relief. Yeah.
And you can throw away app cards again without having to put them into the jiggly mode state. You can tell Siri to turn on the flashlight, which you couldn't do before, but you always wanted when you were in a dark room and didn't want to fumble for your phone. They added a bunch of little things that have been bothering me for a very long time. And a lot of those have been fixed now. My biggest gripe right now, though, is they've been adding search to photos for a while. And it was okay. They had categories. You could type it in and they'd use machine learning to identify the elements in the picture and give them to you. And it was pretty good. It didn't have a lot of there's never enough categories for that stuff, but it was okay. Now they've done search refinement. So I can type in like San Francisco and get all my San Francisco pictures, then type in 2016 and get all the ones from 2016. But I can't type in San Francisco 2016. It just says nothing. Because it can't token it. Like, you have to do the tokenization on your end. And that irks me so much, because you should never stop somebody from typing and never give them no results. You should do everything possible to find a result for them. So,
Photos has nice new features, which you'll see, I guess, as you kind of use it. You'll notice search stuff is suggested. There's some new little for
Sex
you.
Sex suggested.
Yeah. Stuff. So this is generally, I think they a lot of polish has gone into this. There's one thing, Renee, that I'm maybe overthinking.
What's that?
This is on the iPad. They moved the time and date from the center.
No, you're not overthinking.
To the left. Now, do that unless maybe you were thinking of putting a little notch right about there in the middle?
They also added all the iPhone 10 gestures. They overwrote the iOS 11 gestures with the iPhone 10 gestures. Yeah, so they kept the iOS 4 gestures.
You no longer swipe up, for instance, to get to the control center. Mm. You do the from the ear.
What could possibly be coming?
What could possibly be coming?
Apple is so based that they just don't care about that anymore. They're just going to do it.
Well, I'm really glad that there's a unified UI, frankly, because that was a big issue for me, that the iPhone 10 worked differently than every other iOS device. But this room for the notch, I think, is going to, to me, I'm gonna make a leap of induction here that maybe in September we're going to see a new iPad with Face ID.
Will it be
ID.
A horizontal or a landscape or a portrait notch, Leo?
It could be either, couldn't it? Because it's if I flip it, it's see. So
I think it'll be portrait.
It could be either.
It's going to be portrait.
Portrait.
It's going to continue us down the horrible
right,
path.
We'd be right under the regular camera, or maybe just eliminate the camera.
Just
I don't know. I really see Apple figuring out a way to make Face ID, whether the two cameras are vertical or horizontal.
No, really?
Only on the basis that it would be so offensive to force someone to because an iPad is not just a handheld device; it's also a device that's in an easel. So if they give you a keyboard case that prefers horizontal landscape, and they're going to force you to pick it up off the table and twist it, I feel as though they're going to figure out a way, you don't have to twist
Face ID. There's no reason why it couldn't work if it's on the side, right?
No, it was just a generation of it was a constraint of shipping it for Gen 1. Like just, they just had to get it working, and they focused on getting it working one way.
And in fact, I noticed that when I'm sleeping, lying on my side, it doesn't do the face recognition. But somebody told me, I think it was Micah Sargent, told me it's going to start doing it if I'm on my side.
You can also register an alternate appearance now. So even like if you're an actor or a cosplayer, or you wear like big utility glasses, or you do have another appearance, you can't do a second person, but you can do a second.
Oh, no, I was told you could do a second person. You can't do a second person.
No, not designed for a second person. It would try to make some mashup of like a fusion of you.
Oh, okay. But I could add, the other thing that's good, because I wear glasses sometimes. Although I have to say Face ID has learned about my glasses.
Yes.
But if there's a dramatic difference, like pillow face, because I'm squished.
Like when Andy and I take on our roles of Wudong and Wusong in the Chinese opera, we need.
Yeah, there are people who wear face paint, right?
I will say that if you had the Face ID on both ends of a landscape and one in the middle, you get incredible 3D data. That's all I'm saying.
Can I say that when I first got when Face ID first came out, a friend of mine was starring in Cats on Broadway. So I did arrange to he actually put on his makeup especially for this test to see register his face like without makeup, and then in the full asparagus old Gus the old Gus makeup did not recognize him in the old Gus makeup, in the Cat's makeup. So there was
now you can obviously register this limits
that, now 9to5 Mac says that they have been able to use two different people. With this
it's
dual
It's not designed
face ID.
For it. I mean, like you've had two people unlock it with a regular Face ID, but it's not the design purpose of that feature.
Okay. And you can't reset a single Face ID. You have to reset both of them if you reset.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And the language Apple used was Face ID can recognize an alternative appearance.
Yes.
That not
it's a
another
very different
person.
Decision tree. Like for the machine learning model, it would have to learn like, right now it does you, not you. It would have to learn not you, maybe you or somebody else, and then start going down different trees. And it's just an order of it's not impossible. It's just an order of a much more complex model that they have to build.
Yeah.
So, the other thing that's really interesting is that there's the AR. I'm going to call it the AR camera because I don't have a better name for it. But it's in Messages and it's in FaceTime, but it's not in camera. And right now it's using just TrueDepth. But it's not hard to imagine that come this fall, there might be a better camera system and we'll have an honest-to-goodness AR camera. On both sides.
That might be the explanation for the triple lens camera people are rumoring, right?
I think for the year after next, but I think for this year, we'll just start getting, like we talked about last week, just so much better depth data.
Got it.
That we'd be able to do it on both sides.
So it wouldn't have the infrared depth sensing, but it would just have better data.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we need this one. The camera, the L16. That's what we need.
Oh, that silly camera with 400
17.
I don't know if I really want that. So, set up an alternate appearance. It's in the Face ID and passcode area. Set up an alternate appearance. That's cool. That's really cool. I will do that as soon as I have an alternate appearance.
The one thing I also really like, and it's part of the Siri shortcut system, but it's also part of the Do Not Disturb system, is I would forever, like now, I put my phone on Do Not Disturb during the show, and then I'd forget about it, and I wouldn't be getting any calls or messages. And now it not only will say, hey, you know, Renee, you have your movie about to start. Do you want to go into Do Not Disturb? But at the end, you can set it to automatically come out of it, or it'll tell you when you open your phone that you're still in Do Not Disturb, and do you want to stop
nice,
it?
Nice.
And that saved me. Well, now I no longer have that excuse, which is kind of terrible. But it saved me being stuck in Do Not Disturb all day.
Let's talk about Mojave, because that is also now in public beta.
Yep.
Is it? I have to say, I am not unhappy with iOS 12. I don't regret putting it on my main iPad and my main phone. There's some hesitation. Maybe I'll miss a call because I can't get the thing to wake up or whatever. But so far, so good. How about Mojave? Is it? What's its status?
Same thing. It's a beta, so there's some quirky behavior. I've had it on both the iMac Pro and my MacBook Pro since WWDC, and it's been fine. I've had a couple, like sometimes the icons in the dock aren't there. They come back. They haven't abandoned me. The dark mode is really nice. I find it a little bit oppressive all day, every day. So I like that you can switch back and forth.
Yeah.
And Apple did a lot. Like, it's not just a dark mode. It has a lot of treatment to make it look seamless when you switch back and forth. And it also samples the background image and background window so that it's not off-cast compared to what the rest of your environment is like. So it's a cosmetic change, to be sure, but it's a very nice cosmetic change. And it's one that a lot of people, whether you're using pro apps and you want your content to pop, or you're reading in bed, you don't want to be hit in the head with a pillow, all those things, it's much better for.
Not only that, but it took Apple this long to allow us to really choose our own highlight color for like highlighting of buttons. So we're, instead of having just you have two choices, you have both options, both slate gray or blue. Now, if you want a tangerine highlight color, if you want like a red highlight color, when I set up the developer beta, it was like I quickly wound up with leaving my Mac in dark mode with like a sort of a burnt tangerine highlight color, and it feels like I'm running Linux. I feel like a badass.
I use purple because I thought Andy would appreciate it.
If you want to roll back from either iOS 12 or Mojave, you can't.
Yeah, just make a backup first. You know, okay. Please make sure you do your backup first.
So back, and they do really emphasize that, by the way.
Yes.
And if you, what happens when the release versions come out? Are you now out of the beta program, or?
It depends. Like, you can delete the certificate. It's all a certificate system now. So you put a certificate on your computer or your phone, and it knows to look for the beta branch instead of the release branch. And you can delete that at any time. Otherwise, it'll just keep you going into the next, because it'll be in a 12.1 and a Mojave 0.1 beta. So it'll keep you going that way if you want.
So go to beta.apple.com, the Apple Beta Software Program. Public betas are available now for iOS 12 and Mojave. How about tvOS? Is that a public beta yet?
Yep, everything but watchOS. They don't do watchOS because the recovery is so just terrible. You basically have to go to an Apple store if anything goes wrong. So they don't do public betas for that, but for everything else. The other thing that's really cool is I've been trying is the Apple is so in on the privacy stuff, and they have the intelligent private tracking prevention, which last year just used ML to learn about cross-site cookies and prevent them from surfacing. And now it's stamping out Facebook like buttons, share buttons, comment buttons, device fingerprinting. So they were taking snapshots that was unique configuration profiles for your computer and trying to track that across different websites. So now it gives an obfuscated, simplified profile. All of that stuff is really nice.
Yeah. I have a feeling that Apple is implementing this better than Google did when they tried to do something kind of similar with the new versions of Chrome that they released, where quickly people figured out that, oh, well, my games aren't working anymore, my video sites aren't working anymore. It's being too powerful in the sense that it's not being smart enough. Whereas it looks like, or again, at least in the version in the non-beta version that I was using, it feels like the new Safari is good. It feels like it's doing a smarter version of it. It feels like you really do have just this ninja that is effectively only killing the person you told it to kill with no collateral damage.
And it asks you, like, it gives you a little drop down saying, do you want this stuff? And you can say, yes, I do. And then it's fine. But if you don't, like, it's not like, oh my God, I never knew this stuff was even there.
Yeah. That's an underappreciated feature. Communication with the user is just as important as the automation that makes these things work well. The user has to feel as though they're in complete control of the situation. And like any boss of a company or any good boss of a company, you don't necessarily need to do everything that all your employees are doing, but you at least need to know what your employees do so that you have a good picture. You are in control of this device you actually own. So that's another area in which I love how Apple designs the software and services.
One nice thing about Mojave as opposed to iOS or tvOS is you could make a bootable Mojave disk.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be, like, you can choose, you know. So if you made a bootable, is it hard to make a bootable disk? You download an installer. It's the same old process where you extract from the package.
Some people just put it on a partition. I mean, they put it on an external drive. Yeah.
That way you boot to it. You can play with it, but you can go back to the old version if you want High Sierra.
There's a company, I just can't think of the name of them, that I just pulled it out of one of my other computers and I haven't put it into here yet.
Oh, they make the SD card?
The SDR card becomes
second drive.
Another drive.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to do those kind of
tests. It was a mini drive or something like something that. I had one.
Like Next or
something. But it was a Kickstarter. Yeah.
It works well.
Yeah. It's not very fast.
It is pretty fast.
Is it?
Mine is fast. Well, it depends on how fast the card is. I put a really fast
10 card in there. Yeah.
I'm just nostalgic enough to want to put it on SD cards just so I could relive what it was like in 1986 to have to like switch cards like every time I want to like launch or switch apps.
Oh, the good old days.
I can still remember when we read about the idea that there would be these micro SD cards that had 256 gigs and we were like, no way.
I remember Woz coming into the old screensavers with a USB key hung around his neck. He said, "This holds 2 gigabytes. And we were all aghast. Only the Woz would have a 2 gigabyte USB drive.
Cost as much as a Bentley in this room.
It probably did at the time. Yeah.
Now, like, I'm as amazed as I was at the time about like a 1 gigabyte flash drive. When I was cleaning up my house, I thought, oh my God, a 16 megabyte SD card.
I know.
What did you do with that? Like, I can take one JPEG with my camera so long as it's like there's not a whole like a brick pattern with a lot of detail that's uncompressible. It's adorable.
And, I bought a
Daniel Rubino just reviewed a 1 terabyte Dell flash drive.
It's amazing.
That goes inside of your computer. It's like $700, but it's 1 terabyte. Yeah.
Yeah. But see, this is I get so like excited and confused when I see like a half a terabyte like flash drive, like a flash key. Now we're getting into, I could see myself losing this device. Yes. And this is the reason why I own flash keys, you know, for transportation, but I kind of make sure I don't buy the really, really big ones.
I made a mistake of doing that. I bought 4 128 gig. They're beautiful. They were aluminum 128 gig SS, thumb drives, and I can't find them. There's someone.
Oh, do you remember that story?
They're too easy
to
lose.
The final version of Return of the King, and they put it on an iPod because it was the only thing big enough at the time, and they had to walk it from the fiber to Weta, and a guy started chasing them. And he didn't know what it was about, and he started running trying to get to Weta because he had the only final copy of it on an iPod. That's when I started to worry about
it. Don't steal it. I bought just this week. I'm thinking about my vacation in the fall. We're going to have some water sports, so I wanted a little point-and-shoot, waterproof point-and-shoot. Got the new Olympus TG5, which is a nice little dust-proof water. I've had it before. It's really nice. So I thought, I have a 64-gig SD card. I put it in there. It says you can get 9,999 pictures. It's like, oh, that probably lasts me the entire lifetime of the camera.
Why don't I just, like, push down the shutter button when I get off the plane, tape it down.
Just the whole trip.
And take off the tape when I get home.
Yeah. 9,900. And I think it didn't say 10,000 only because it didn't have more digit space. It was like...
It's like asteroids. It looped over.
It looped.
I have to admit that I've gotten into buying... I haven't gotten one for my 10, but I've gotten into buying, you know, the diveable shells for the iPhone.
Do they make them?
I think they make them for the 10. I have them for an older phone. I have them 6.
It makes me nervous. But I mean, these are theoretically waterproof, right?
It does make me nervous, but I've, you know, I tested it gingerly with an older phone. And then started using it. And what's great is that then it's just on your roll. And it's got the GPS. And it's got all the other things
everything.
In it. Yeah. But you can shoot underwater and, you know, all the other stuff. I'm going to...
This Olympus was $300. It wasn't that expensive.
That's great.
And I thought...
Yeah. It's great to have one that you can take.
The
nice thing about it is that you're not going traveling where you have a camera that you could lose. You lose your phone, you're really bummed.
Yeah, I don't want to lose my phone.
Yeah, so I definitely have also throwaway cameras.
Also, Olympus, that's like they've been making these really absolutely indestructible cameras for like 10, 12. The first one I had, I tried to kill it and I just plain couldn't. And the idea of having 300, if I were going on vacation, I would consider if it were a really good one with my family, I'd consider getting an action camera, but I don't know whether I would decide to get something like a GoPro or something like the TG5, because the TG5, you're taking much better pictures, you're taking a really good video, but also it really is, you can drop it, no problem, you can get it wet, you can get it in sand, no problem. The last one I had was about 8 or 9 years ago, and that was a loaner that I decided to just buy because I was using it enough. But I'm actually considering adding one to my stash of cameras, because there are those like two or three times a year where, okay, I think my OMD EM1 is waterproof and dustproof enough for this. I don't know that it's waterproof and dustproof enough for this, and I would love to have a camera with a TG5.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll bring it next time, and you can play with it. I mean, it's a point and shoot, but it's not hugely expensive. F2 lens, which is nice. 4x zoom. Mm-hmm. It does shoot RAW.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is nice, and 4K video. So, and the main thing, you know, I think I had it because of you, Andy. I bought it like the TG1 or something, and so I decided to get this, up to date, because I gave the other one to one of my kids at one point. Down to 15 meters. There are, you can go deeper if you want a scuba. You can get a deeper one than this, but this is fine for me. I'm not going down past
more than 45 feet.
Yeah, right. 50 feet's enough for me.
Way down.
Yeah, I think I'll probably 1 or 2 feet.
They'll be able to take the camera off your body and find out what the damn fool thing you did that got you drowned. That's basically yeah, exactly. It's tougher. I don't need a camera that's tougher than I am.
It's only 12 megapixels, but I think that they do that so they can get better low light performance. I don't think that. Yeah, I think they realize nobody really wants. This is the other camera I'm bringing is 42 megapixels, so I think probably set. But see, this one I wouldn't want to get wet.
Takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah. People don't appreciate that. You would much rather have a 12 megapixel sensor that's way, way more light sensitive, because they'll take their waterproof camera or their phone in waterproof housing, and then they'll go down even just like 8 feet close to shore and surprise that, oh, here's a nice picture of dark green with flashes of dark blue.
Right.
There's like no, the cameras are not set up to get light that's been filtered through 8 feet of seawater.
Exactly. This has a backscatter mode that I haven't tried it, but it supposedly does a good job underwater and stuff like that. I don't know. It's cheap enough. The list is $380. I think I got it for $340 on Amazon. It's cheap enough that
use a lot of bioluminescence, Leo.
Yeah,
a lot of bioluminescence.
Yeah, we're a heavy man.
Until you get to 13,000 feet, when the non-terrestrial intelligence spaceship gets there, then because like Renee say, they're bioluminescent. They'll also make sure that you can breathe at crush depth. So
this I don't remember if the old one had this, but they have these super macro modes now in these, which is kind of cool. So you can get, they call it microscope mode, but it's really a macro mode.
Right.
But it really can get pretty close to stuff, which is also kind of fun. I don't know. It's an adjunct. Because what I said I'm going to do on this trip, Chris Marquardt just convinced me to only bring a 50.
Where is the trip?
Oh, my God. It's an amazing trip.
Are you allowed to tell?
Yeah. Start in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Go to Portugal, Spain, Malta, France. Italy, we're going to Positano. We're going to the Amalfi Coast.
But other than that,
we're going to Morocco. Going to
oh man!
So it's
how long are you? How long are you traveling?
It's almost a month.
When?
September. I won't be here. Just warning you.
Nothing's happening, Leo. It's fine.
Nothing ever happens in September, does it?
Oh,
I'm actually feeling terrible. I don't know why I booked a trip during the Apple announcement. Once again.
Well, who knows? They haven't announced it yet.
Maybe it'll be October. No, it's just, you know what? I feel so bad that they don't invite me. I decided, well, screw you. I'm going to Barcelona.
No, I'm not available even if you try to invite me.
Oh,
but tapas and ham. Losers are going to be writing 80,000 words.
The good news is I know I'll be able to order that iPhone from wherever I am. Instantaneously, Face ID,
and the ability, you're going to be in the presence of so many wonderful fezzes, not the awful ones from
this
Party Central.
This is basically a hat trip. I'm going to bring back hats from every land.
I endorse and support this endeavor.
It sounds like it's going to be a scene from Brooklyn Nine-Nine where Leo tries to order, but his hands are so covered in Yabon Berica that no, it's not registering. It's too slippery.
Give me one. Come on. But no, so I'm only going to bring a fixed prime manual focus. Ooh. And then this is the A7R2, which has a 42 megapixel, mm-hmm. really like almost medium format. Right. So this is going to be like for a really good picture that takes an hour to compose and shoot. And then I'll have the point and shoot in my phone.
Just firing. Right. Just firing.
Anyway, I'm sorry I brought it up. People get mad at me when I talk about vacations. I should.
Because now, so hungry, right? Thanks to you, Renee, I'm thinking of ham again.
Yeah, ham.
I know.
I haven't been to Barcelona in like 7 or 8 years, but I still remember. Just like I remember all the Guinness I drank in Dublin. I have lightning memories of every single ham that I ate in Barcelona.
Yes. All right. Well, I want to really make you jealous now because when we go to town, sometimes I just book. There's a thing called Tours by Locals where you get local people to take you around, and I booked a tapas tour for one of the evenings.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
Stop eating a day and a half
local
before.
Barcelona native is
going to take this. You're going to need that macro lens.
Oh, I'm going to roll out of there.
I'm hungry right now.
Our show today brought to you by a very important sponsor. Don't tell them this, but I really would. We've been giving them free ads for about 10 years since they first came out, LastPass. I've been using LastPass almost forever personally. Steve Gibson, I convinced him that he should be using it. But first he said, no, I want to talk to the founder and the technology guy and see. And he interviewed Joe Segrist. Joe was great. He showed him the code, the JavaScript, everything. Steve Gibson, this was some years ago, gave it his seal of approval, still uses LastPass. And then we started using it for the company because something happened. We had an engineer who couldn't remember all of our passwords, like to our website and our servers and the money. And so he just put it on he published it on a public website so he could find it easily. And when that happened, I realized we need LastPass at work as well. And we got LastPass Enterprise. Now we have secured all of the most important stuff. 81% of breaches are caused by weak or reused passwords. You want to protect your passwords at work. Every password in our business is protected, but it doesn't slow down employees. It's the onboarding's easy. Password autofill, both on the phone and in the web, makes it really easy to use. We get automated security reports. We take control of our passwords. It simplifies. LastPass Enterprise simplifies password management for companies of every size, and centralizes control of employee passwords and apps. This was something what we really needed. Every employee gets their own secure vault for managing passwords. We set master password requirements, length, and things like that. We also require two-factor. You can do that as well, and we do it. You can restrict access to specific locations and devices. All of LastPass's versions do that. That was a nice thing. When I got to Japan, I tried to use LastPass. I said, well, you've said you don't want to be able to use it outside the U.S. You better. And so I had to re-authenticate directly with LastPass so I could use it. It wasn't a hard thing, but it was a great thing because that keeps somebody from, somebody in Russia or China from hacking my LastPass. As the enterprise version has LastPass password resets, we can turn those on. It really makes it easier to share passwords too. Employees can share passwords within folders. Folders are limited to certain classes of employees. So we keep everything secure. And of course, everything's encrypted at device level with AES 256. Prevents man-in-the-middle attacks. It's a trust-no-one system. Even LastPass doesn't have access to the contents of your vault. It's just the best way to secure your business, your personal. If you're not using LastPass, do me a favor. Do it right now. LastPass Premium for personal use. LastPass Families for the entire family. LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or less. And LastPass Enterprise for the businesses at work and at home. Fix your password woes with LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. It's the one we use. And by the way, every employee, we do this as a benefit, but it also is a benefit to us. Every employee gets their own personal LastPass when you work here. And that's because I want everybody to be secure. LastPass.com/twit. Protect every password in your business. LastPass.com/twit. And individuals, please, you should be using it too. It's not. It is easy. It's fast. It works.
We've been using it for I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Oh, yeah, we run the whole company. Like, and what's great about it is we do a lot of things that are secure, and a lot of times I don't want to share it. So, I, you know, you have a folder that is these things that are there.
They don't get the password.
They never see the password. They can log in, but they don't get the password.
I love that feature. They can't change it. They can't see it.
And then you also set it up. I set it up so that anytime you log into LastPass, I liked, from a security perspective, it logs out of everything else. So every time I move along, I only have one thing open, and that's just a setting that you can set as an admin. But there are a lot of nice tweaks
you can do to it that make it even more secure. And I turn on a lot of those features, especially two-factor. For a long time, I was using it with a YubiKey. So you had to have a hardware token to log into it.
Yeah.
That's a nice feature as well. All right, Renee Ritchie, let's get the latest on the brute force password hack.
As the case may be.
So the idea was... that an attacker could send all the passwords at once.
Yes, with no spaces.
In one string with no spaces, and that somehow, this puzzled me, the iPhone would see each four digits separately, but wouldn't count them, so it wouldn't trigger the password, you know, the data erasing feature, because it would see it as one attempt. So Ionic, who's the guy who created this,
He didn't create, I forget.
Hacker Fantastic did.
Yeah, Hacker Fantastic created it. Ionic was very quick to say it doesn't sound right to me, though.
Right. So, Hacker Fantastic then said, it seems Ionic might be right. The pins don't always go to the secure enclave in some instances due to pocket dialing overly fast input. So although it looks like pins are being tested, they aren't always set. Some are, some aren't. So when he tested it, he lucked out. That he had a pin that was tested, but it wouldn't guarantee you the entire set. Apple confirmed this to you, Renee.
Yes.
The recent report, this is Apple's statement that they gave you, the recent report about a passcode bypass on the iPhone was an error and a result of incorrect testing. But it does sound like some of the codes go...
There was a whole long list on Twitter, and you could follow Hacker Fantastic's threads just to see all of it. But it sounds like he sent a bunch and then sent the correct one as the lead of a string, and that's why it worked. But that was just happenstance.
It would have to be the first thing in the string for it to work. Okay. Yeah. He also pointed out that it does take some time, and if you had a six-digit code, which all modern devices do, it would be virtually impossible to crack brute force. Yeah,
or like Andy said last week, if you have a pass, like an alphanumeric password, you might as well go watch the heat death of the universe and come back later.
And that's, by the way, because of that, for the last few months, I've got a really long pain in the ass to enter, but it's good. And that was more about the law enforcement and celebrating and all this stuff. But it's a good thing to have. The stronger the password, the better in general. Yeah. So this is, there's nothing to worry about here. This Hacker Fantastic has basically withdrawn his claim.
Yeah, and Zero Day Charlie showed up to say, hey, maybe all you magazines shouldn't just look at a tweet and write a whole article on it, but actually ask the researcher or call Apple first.
Is really, is all those stories came from people just seeing a tweet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think like really journalists should be... abstracts and- Journalists should be banned from Twitter. I see far too many stories that basically come from a tweet. I think we could...
Well, anytime there's Black Hat is about to come up, it feels like they read through all the abstracts and then just post a bunch of stories based on that. And the thing is, like, and because there's almost nothing that gets your attention, like panic. Like, if you tell someone a house is on fire, people pay a lot of attention. Yeah. Yeah. But that ends up being the exploit. The exploit is your article, not... to do with the or bytes.
I mean, I think this is for the most part press everywhere today. Is that
there's such an urgency to get the story. You don't want to be the last one to cover it.
A desperation for attention.
Well, and anything that sizzles at all is going to get you a bunch of views. It's going to get you more advertising dollars.
Even if it's not true.
And exactly.
Unfortunately, I think there are some publications that don't really care about the you know, it's the TMZ style of reporting. It's not about the veracity. Yeah, it's about the traffic.
Like Time.
Newsweek's a better example.
I think it's more like the cable news type of newscasting. not that they people want to are happy about reporting on a story where they don't have the facts, but if they have to stay on the air and saying, we still have no information about the presence of that missing plane. In 2 minutes, we'll be talking right. to an expert in aviation who quit the industry 3 years ago, who will tell us why he doesn't know yeah. where the plane is either. And that's oftentimes where these things come from. I will say that there was a lot of discussion when I got distracted by a bright shiny object. the Gray Key when Gray Key said that, hey, don't worry about Apple's coming up with this way right. to make it harder. Don't worry, not only have we already tested our box against it and it works, but we've also put in future proofing features that make sure that Apple really can't do that. That led to a lot of speculation within the profession about what they could possibly be talking about, or if they're just sort of blowing smoke so that they don't lose contracts. And right now, the people who I have access to, and at least the stuff they're willing to tell me, they still have no idea what Gray Key could be talking about. But the people I've been talking to, they're very honest with me about saying that either they are blowing smoke or they really have discovered something that is so cool that they absolutely do not want anybody else to know right. about it. In either case, they think is equally possible.
One of the bigger problems too is like there's things like Forbes Contributor Network, and there was a story that Apple was going to replace the iPhone 10 with a lower cost model, and they said their story was Apple cancels iPhone 10. And then last week there was a story that Apple, like Google and like other manufacturers, is toying around with the idea of removing physical ports, and their story was Apple is removing Lightning port from iPhone 10, which would entail Apple going to your house and physically yanking it out of your phone. I just can't remove it
from iPhone 10. It's in there.
Yeah, and it's all these words like is and will when you also see like in the headline definitive phrases like breaking story or proof positive, like, well, then you read it, say, confirmed. No, they talked to a guy. Yeah, exactly. That was what I was looking for. Confirmed. Apple restoring a headphone jack to the new iPhone, saying, you mean that you have actually held in your hand a shrink wrap box, unwrapped the box, and seen that there's a no, you talked to an analyst that you talked to once before who says that here. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
There was a story, though, Leo, too, over the weekend about the keyboards.
Yes, this isn't link bait. This isn't link bait, this headline. Apple no. admits its computers are broken.
Yeah. No, don't read that article. Read mine.
This is Casey Johnston on the outline.
I love
outline.
Casey Johnston, but the outline has just the most please look at me headlines.
I bet you Casey didn't write that headline. I don't know why I'm thinking about it. They did announce a repair program for the butterfly keyboards, though, right? This is something you've wanted.
So yeah, so it's very specific. It is not it's not a recall, so you can't just take your MacBook and have the keyboard replaced. It's not a replacement program so that all the keyboards are replaced. It's a service program so that if you exhibit one of the specified issues, they will replace it for you for free, either the entire keyboard or the key cap, either today or for the next 4 years from the date in which you purchased
and
it.
And if you had repairs, they'll refund yes. you, which is great.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What are the specific issues that they will be fixing?
Stuck keys, non-responsive keys, repetitive keys, anything that basically affects the reliability of entering, of tapping that button and making that character appear on the screen.
So you have to have the problem. It's not yes. a recall. You have to have the problem, and then they'll fix it. But you've had that
and
problem
it's not
on,
like,
on how many laptops?
One out of eight now.
Okay. Yeah. I've had the MacBook, and this goes back to the original MacBook where they first started using the butterfly key,
yeah.
and all the MacBook Pros with the butterfly keys, one and two.
And are these only the butterfly keys? Because we have problems yeah. with these. With
the, I have problems chiclets. With the scissor keys too. Yeah, so yeah. I've had the chiclet replaced as well. So, yeah.
But this particular repair program is for the butterfly keys though,
mm-hmm. and yeah. it doesn't count water damage or anything else. It's only for failure right. of the mechanism due to dust
faulty,
or some other
faulty yeah. keyboard. It has to be a yeah. faulty but, keyboard. And they also say they may replace one key or all of the
yes.
keys. They don't,
which is a change because previously they would always do the entire case, which yeah. is why it was so expensive.
Yeah.
But that is significant. Like Renee says, this isn't there. Apple sometimes has policies where if you were to bring in an iPad for just because, oh, well, like I forgot my passcode. How do I get around? How do I like read whatever? And then, oh, they scan it. So they realize that, oh, well, your device has an alert for us saying that we will swap it out for a new battery because we've determined that there's a problem that we need to proactively fix. This isn't that. But the fact that they are saying that from now on, essentially the keyboard is the keyboard within any reliable determination of something the user did not do that caused the keyboard to fail. We're now extending the warranty by 4 years. They wouldn't have done that if they didn't see a hugely alarming amount of repair problems that were coming in about it. And or it wasn't becoming such a flagrant pain in the butt for PR that they had to do something about it. And this is really all I ever wanted. I think that it's okay if Apple doesn't recall that would be saying that the keyboard was fundamentally defective, which is a determination I disagree with. But just tell me that if it's provable that more people than normal, a hugely number of more people are having problems with this keyboard. All you got to do is I'll it's okay with me if I lose my keyboard for 3 or 4 days, so long as it's not going to cost me $900 because 1 year and 3 days later, suddenly I have no vowels on my keyboard. That doesn't seem like a device that earns the Apple seal of quality and design approval.
And I did talk to a bunch of people in a bunch of different departments, and I do think it is a lot of it is what happens in Apple is it's a big company. It has procedures, and all these procedures get followed. And sometimes it doesn't feel like they're listening, but often it's tripped by numbers. And like Apple did previously, yeah, they did a battery recall because the number of incidents exceeded what was considered tolerable for that product. And so the process gets started. Apple reviews and they say, yep, we need to do a battery fix on these. This never reached that level for keyboard. It sounds to me like the sentiment was so bad, though. And that's probably why it's a service program and not a replacement program, because if it had hit a level where they're like, oh, these keyboards are just bad, we've got to replace them, it would have been a replacement program. But it sounded like it was just so toxic that they knew they had to do something. And even though the numbers weren't quite there yet, they wanted to go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are three class action lawsuits. Do you think
they're sued for everything? I'm sure.
And also, if you read the lawsuits, I don't think they're going to go very far because the filing makes the claim that Apple knew that these things were defective but shipped them anyway, as opposed to it seems to and realize that there is a legal definition of defective. That means that they should not have shipped this to begin with, as opposed to there is just a higher return rate and a higher problematic rate coming back with these things. I don't really think that these suits are going to go anywhere.
But I think that this is direct.
This is Apple scale.
This is triggered by those suits because, as you say, Andy, if you can't meet the higher standard, which I'm sure it'll be very difficult to meet that Apple knew. Nevertheless, if Apple shows goodwill by saying, well, we do have a repair program, I think the judge looks at that and says, you're fine. You've satisfied all the requirements. So and it's also, my guess they did this because of these class action lawsuits. This is the last piece of that puzzle.
There's also a small percentage for it's still a lot of people. Even if it's 1% of Apple's base, that's a small percentage, but that's a lot of people. And Apple's bottom line still, like even if you go into an Apple store today, they would like to keep you as a customer. It's cheaper for them to keep you as a customer than try to go get a new customer. So if they can do this and make people very happy, then it's much better.
Ultimately, that's the real argument. It's the right thing to do for customers.
Yeah. I do think they acknowledge that there is a much higher level of problem with these styles of keyboards than the previous ones. I have no firsthand knowledge, but I don't think they would have done this just simply as a PR goodwill gesture. I don't think they would have done this. I think they would have still done this if there hadn't been that class action suit. But this does give them, a really, really good out. If it were a more serious problem, I think it would have been any time that a model keyboard range of serial numbers comes in the Apple Store. Guess what? We will swap out that entire plate, or we will essentially clean out the entire keyboard anytime you want to come and bring it in. I think another factor was just that this is one. I can't think of an Apple hardware problem that was a worse thumb in the eye. Then again, you've had this machine for less than 2 years, and now keys are not working. And you've had MacBooks for the past 10 years. You have never had keyboards fail before, like 3 or 4 years before. And now Apple is telling you, whereas 5 years ago they said, oh well, we're going to replace your keyboard. That'll be $200-$300 for the new keyboard and $100 for service. And they're saying that, well, because we're essentially gluing all of these together, we're going to have to charge you more than half the purchase purchase, your original purchase price for this device. That is the sort of thing that says, or I could take that $1,000 and buy something that was not made by Apple, the company that sold me an expensive machine that broke after 1 month after warranty in a stupid way and now won't fix it for any reasonable amount of money.
Well, and I think the hard part that Apple has also is that they released the MacBook Pro, and a lot of us said, oh, those keyboards are horrible. And then it turned out, you know, of course, the sell is that, well, they're new and they're amazing. It turns out that
you just haven't given it a chance yet. Wait until we've designed it so that like English muffin crumbs are the necessary lubricant that will give you that force resistance you've been missing from previous models.
I mean, yeah. I think the problem for me is I'm still on a 2015 and I'm not in any rush to move, you know, mostly because of MagSafe and the keyboard are the two.
I think the problem is, Alex, that you have taste, you have class, you have standards. So
there's also a graphics card replacement for some of the models too. That's a separate program.
Here's the worst news that I have for today is that we were having some trouble with playback on something, and Kevin Hansen, who's at Pixelcore, he was playing something that was really smooth on his computer and not on ours, and I was like, what? That computer is different. He goes, it's a 2017. I mean, it's 17 inch. I'm sorry. It's a 17 inch. Yeah. That was smoother. Plays some of the stuff we were doing back better. The graphics card in the 17 inch,
which is ancient,
2011 or something like that, is better than the one that's on the computer now.
That's depressing.
Not that I'm bitter.
Why don't you have eGPUs? That's the Apple solution.
That's where we're going.
There's still a discrete card in the 15-inch of the new MacBook Pros. It's just not in the 13 or the baseline.
Maybe you guys just don't have the discrete card in the other ones.
We turned them all on. I mean, you know, we turned on all the, you know, we.
Renee, what did you do with the one that you had problems with? Did you bring it in and get it fixed?
No, I air canned. Yeah, I cleaned that. But Apple is not refunding all that air, though, which is sad.
So some people are able to fix these. It's not that you can't fix them.
So this is just a guess, but Apple, this part of this design was supposed to make it not just flatter, but also wear better, and dust is harder to get in. But when it gets in, it's almost impossible.
Harder to get out.
To get out, yeah. So that didn't work out great.
My only issue with the keyboard is just the lack of travel and the way it lands, which is a little harder than I'd like. I'd like it to be a little softer.
It's loud. I don't mind
the
keyboard.
Clacky. It's clacky. Yeah. That's the other thing. That didn't bother me quite so much, but the loudness.
It never bothers the person typing. Yeah, right. People who aren't typing.
But it's a symptom. It's a symbol of the fact that the travel is so short and that the end is so abrupt. That's why it's clacky. Right. If they put a little cushion under there, I might not have that problem. I don't know.
Interesting to see what they do come the fall.
I like the clack. Oh, I have a clacky keyboard.
Do you think come the fall we'll get new MacBooks?
Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to have new, because a lot of people are waiting for their redesign, right? Like with the Face ID camera in it, and they delete all the bezels.
It's pretty early to redesign that. These are new as of 2016. These new designs.
We'll probably get the new iPads, and then we'll get a spec bump, Coffee Lake.
Well, yep. I'm just holding on to this 2015 as long as I can. I know.
Well, they still, you know, that there's a problem when they still sell it.
It was flickering.
I mean, but they sold the CD-ROM version of the Mac Pro for like 10 years after.
You could argue they sell it because some businesses will only buy it with the MagSafe. Or there may be
the older ports.
Yeah, MagSafe.
But also realize that they have the tooling, they have the factory lines for this. It's easy for them to essentially build way more than they need, have them in stock, and then keep freshing them with new software.
I wish they would refresh the processors, then it would be fine.
Yeah.
I agree.
Apparently the processors they use, Intel finally shipped them a month or two ago, and they're being integrated now, which is why I think we'll see them
in the fall. Which ones
remember,
are those?
It's not like,
is KB Lake?
Coffee Lake. Intel's announced Coffee Lake. But Intel announces like one processor 9 months before the rest. And Apple typically waits for the multi-core ones that also have the Vega Pro graphics.
Okay.
The Iris Pro graphics.
Right.
And those apparently came out like a month or 2 months ago.
Yeah.
The exact date.
Well, we knew those came out, and then there was some issue that they maybe weren't producing them in great enough quantity. Because we've seen, I mean, some of the PC makers are shipping those or announced them But they may only make 30,000 of them. Apple would need
and
to
some
make
of them,
millions.
Frankly, are not reliable. Like we saw a bunch of Windows vendors rush to Skylake, and those things wouldn't shut down properly. Turn the furnaces in your bags, and I think Apple has learned to very, very carefully test these at very large quantities before rolling them out.
Well, and I think that one of the things that, I mean, Apple does things at such a high precision that there is just high failure rates internally. Usually, they don't get out to us. Right. But I mean, I heard from somebody a long time ago that like the when they put change to this new key, the new trackpad, it was like the rejection was like 40%, you know, in the factory. I mean, so when we think about like what their profit margins are on all these machines, when, you know, an analyst looks at it, yeah, sure, if you're not throwing any of them away.
Asus, so here's the, there's 17, as according to CNET, as of now, 17 laptops with these new 6-core i7s, these new Coffee Lake 6-core. I would love a 6-core. Mm-hmm. With, and I think, do these have discrete graphics? Is it the AMD that's paired with these? I can't remember. Some of them
are the Frankenstein chips.
The Frankensteins. So this is the Asus ROG, the Samsung Odyssey 7, or I'm sorry, Z. There's several of those. The MSI GT series. So far, of these, only the Asus is available at Amazon right now. Alienware. It's a lot of gaming machines. The Dell G315 is available at Dell right now. Quad core though, not hex core.
Yeah, and when Apple gets them, they also do a ton of customization work with Intel, where they do everything like PowerNap, and they deeply integrate. And the T chip on some lap, like the MacBook Pros, has to take over the Apple Pay and the display of Apple Pay graphics, but it has to work with the main system to do that, and it's a little bit of work.
Let me just quickly see. I think I can configure. This is one of my favorite PC laptops. If they would only run Mac software, if I could just get Mac OS on one of these. Let me see if I can configure this with the hexa-core processors. I bet I can.
I do like Dell though, because I still have Lenovo, and I forget the other company on timeout after they put
Optane's the other thing I would really like. I'd love to get a i9 with Optane. That's the new memory, the new 3D memory, the crossover, a cross-point memory, and SSD.
I mean, people are still going to be upset because they still don't, even Coffee Lake, as far as I know, doesn't support more than 16 gigabytes of low power RAM.
Is that true? Oh, that's disappointing. Yeah.
Intel is not having a good year lately.
Intel is not going to have a good decade. I'm feeling that the time has come. Great article by Ben Thompson in Stratechery about really why Intel is struggling. Of course, they just
had a good one
replace
too.
Their CEO. Yeah, he quotes Ben Beharin in it.
Yeah.
I think Intel's going to have some trouble going forward.
They have somewhat of an Atlas problem, where their processors are holding up 80% of the computers in the world, which means that as much as they might want to do something revolutionary, as much as they might want to make a huge, huge sweeping change and maybe eat it for a couple of years while they do the transition, there are too many suppliers that are giving them way too much money for making these really successful chips. It's really hard for them to have the same influence over their product line as Apple can have over the CPUs that are in iOS devices.
Ben Thompson had a
great thread. Did you see that one, Leo? Because he had to deal with them when he ran Windows. Right. And he was saying that almost all the time they were talking about how they could screw over AMD, not how they could make good products. And he always thought that would bite them in the end. You just can't run a company that way.
Ben's point is a little bit more nuanced, but he says Intel really boxed themselves in because one of the reasons for their success early on was tight integration with Windows, with the operating system. But he says Intel ended up being hemmed in by its integrated approach. That's why they missed mobile. It's why they missed graphics, right? Their Larrabee architecture was an x86 graphics chip, and it failed compared to NVIDIA and AMD. And now their current crisis is that a number of fabs are down to 7 nanometers. Intel can't seem to get down that side. And then the Ryzen processors, the new multi-core processors from AMD, are actually pretty good. Intel's management, writes Ben, did not break out of the integration mindset. Design and manufacturing were assumed to be in lockstep forever. And ultimately, that's a box that they're going to have a very hard time breaking out of. And it's why it's a cautionary tale for Apple, because Apple wants to do the same thing. But it's also why Apple's designed chips do so much a better job. They're tightly integrated to the OS.
Well, and you have things like Apple pushing for Metal, which is a good example of, you know, it wants to make sure that it works really well across all the platforms, and so it's written code that optimizes for that, and then it's going to build processors that optimize, you know, and they're working with you know, they're
I think AMD is going to build Metal, or has already built Metal support. But Sanofsky's thing was interesting because he was saying that whenever they talked to them, they were not talking about how to better support Windows. They were talking about how to make unnecessary features that were exclusive to Intel that AMD couldn't offer, like just for optical reasons. And that led them to, and they didn't care about graphics. They thought the CPU would be fast enough that they'd never have to worry about graphics. Meanwhile, the other companies were investing heavily in graphics.
Yeah. Two different takes. Probably both accurate. You know, I'm not. They're not mutually exclusive.
No, totally.
Intel really was, you know, said x86. That's it. We're all in on x86, and that ultimately didn't
That's
scale.
When they saw that AMD 64 code. And I think that every day.
I think that they're also just really challenged to try to keep up with Moore's law. I mean, they just, you know, at some point they aren't able to, and they just had so many delays. I mean, the delays are a big reason that Apple is probably going to go down its own path.
As usual, the last paragraph in Ben's articles are always the ones to pay attention to. Man, basically, he's saying this is what makes disruption so devastating. Absent a crisis, it's almost impossible to avoid disruption. Managers are paid to leverage their advantages, not destroy them, to increase margins, not to obliterate them. Culture is an organization's greatest asset right up until it becomes its curse. And he says that's what's happened at Intel, and that may well be. But it does, you know, that's, I think, why when Apple and Microsoft both say ARM processors, in Microsoft's case designed by other companies, in Apple's case designed by internally, are the future for our desktop systems. Boy, that's bad news for Intel.
Yeah. It points to how we're just changing the definition of what a desktop computer is, that we're going back to a distributed model where so much of the processing power of the apps that we use is actually being done by a server, whether we're in an office environment or not. So this is not something that anybody could have bet on 5 years, right. 5 years out. So
it is a cautionary tale for Apple, though, because Apple could potentially have the same problem. Any company that's massively successful with a single product can have a problem.
Apple has been good so far. Like the old saying is that you never want to mistake your product for your business, which is what did Steve Ballmer in, because everything had to be Windows.
Right.
It didn't have to be software. And Apple was like, we're not a Mac company. We're not an iPod company. We're not even an iPhone company. If we can make something that kills them, let's us be the one that killed them.
And look what they've done with services over the last few years. That's clearly going to be a big growth center for Apple
News. I mean, they haven't integrated Texture yet, but they're just launching their election hub where they're like, AI is not the complete answer. You have to have AI balanced by humans because the AI is going to feed you good junk food and the humans have to make sure you get your vegetables.
That's actually one of our stories. The news app is going to have a midterms election tab,
which I think is really dangerous.
You think so?
For Apple to take a handful of editors and say, we're going to now feed you what you want about an election, puts them squarely in the...
Oh, boy.
In the, I mean, I just think that that is really dangerous.
It's curated AI. So the AI pulls out a lot of stuff that interests you, and then the editors try to service issues.
Having human editors picking political news that is being distributed is a very, very dangerous thing to do. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. We already have that happening at the New York Times, the Boston Globe, at the San Jose Mercury News. That's basically what newspapers are all about. I think we're giving people, consumers of journalism, choices between different products. I think that it's Google's method is reassuring because it says, look, this is not being touched by human hands. We are not trying to influence you by any human beings here saying that we want to make sure that if there's a really, really popular trending article on how horrible it is to separate immigrant children from their parents, we got to make sure that we post just as prominently a counter argument saying, oh, well, this is just what people deserve. They can fall back on saying, look, we have algorithms that simply say that might be flawed in their own way, but there is no one's personal agenda trying to go in your way. Apple's way of having some curation, you can't machine learning is the product of human learning once removed, so you can't avoid some kind of bias, and sometimes you really do need somebody at the end of that assembly line to make sure that there are no like nail filings inside the Twinkies before they get wrapped and shipped. And that's what's been happening with news a lot.
I do have to say that Tell me if it's just me, because I'm looking at the new Apple News. This is part of iOS 12.
Yeah.
In the For You section, they apparently think I am interested in the Dugars, in a breastfeeding mom, a teen's murder. This is all crap that I don't want to see in For You. And then another thing that bothers me is these giant banner ads, which Apple apparently can't sell because they're all for animal shelter, an animal shelter right now. But are these going to end up being... So two problems I see right now, and maybe this is just because it's the beta. This is the new browse section on the side on the iPad. Is that this is not for me. This is absolutely not for me. And is Apple going to start selling giant banner ads into this? And if they are, how are they going to sell it without tracking my usage? That's so how you sell this stuff.
So they've been doing those ads, I think, for a year or 2 years. They made them available. And it's similar to you can go read their privacy statement. They do some level of tracking for it, and it persists for a certain amount of time. I forget the details because Apple needs
it. It's not competitive if they can't meet Google and Facebook's offers of information about what people are buying. Nobody's going to buy an ad in Apple News if they can buy it in Facebook and Google.
Unless they can show volume. Because there is this merit, it's not, I don't want to call it meritorious. There is this model of brand advertising that a lot of podcast ads use where they give up on some tracking because they know that, like the classic example is like web companies. They may know you don't need a website today, but they want you to remember their name when you do need a website. And Samsung is famous for this. They wallpaper airports because they know you're not buying a phone today, but when you walk into the carrier, they want Samsung to be the only name.
So that's who buys network television because you can't really.
Yeah. Brand and Apple is doing. They are doing tracking. Like they have disclosed that it's in their privacy page. I forget the details, but they will do. But I think it's like location based. It'll only serve you ads based on your location, not very deep stuff.
Be interesting to watch. And obviously, at least in the beta, all they're selling is public service announcements. They're not selling those. Those are being given.
When did you put the beta on that device, Leo? Was it today?
Last night. Yeah.
So it might take a while to actually, if you go through and start liking ads, maybe it'll start understanding the, not ads, sorry, liking articles, it'll start understanding your taste.
So you think it's not using information it got previously?
No, they were very good at walling. See, I don't know how much it translates. They wall news off from other stuff, though, so it might have to rebuild.
Because it knows what I'm following. It has the following information from my previous setup.
It may not be working yet.
Yeah, it may not be working yet. It's pretty bad. It was why I stopped using it in the first place, because I was getting a lot of crap in there.
There was that thing at the keynote where Craig goes, and you have the section for you, then he looks at one of the articles and goes, not really for me, and then he keeps going.
Well, and the problem is I'm probably exacerbating it because I'm getting this gossip in here, and so I'm clicking on it. And then it goes, see, we did pick the right thing for you. But I don't really want to – I mean, of the articles it's suggesting for me, four of them are from People Magazine, which I don't ever read and is not in my list of – followed
so
sources.
If you like some articles you do actually want to see more of, it should start kicking in.
Yeah, I don't really want to read about the science behind happy relationships from Time Magazine. 7 paid iPhone apps on sale for free right now. Probably won't read that. Russian pop star who arranged Trump Tower meeting makes music. Not interested.
You can probably probably hate them. I don't forget what they
I wish I could hate them. If I could thumbs down stuff, I would. But, you know, I have to open it to do either of those.
I have this other pet peeve is that they're inconsistent with what like, – there's a heart icon, a bookmark icon, a star icon.
There is an unhearted.
And they mean like – they mean different things in different Apple apps.
Unfortunately, you have to unheart it.
It's not even consistent with iTunes, which is – with iTunes and Apple Music, which annoys the hell out of me. But what annoys me – another thing that annoys me is that they've decided to express the Apple News app in the beta of the new Mac OS as a translated version of the iOS app, which A, is problematic because it feels like an iOS app that's been ported to Macintosh as opposed to a Mac app. But secondly, that a news app is the absolute gold standard for why are you even bothering to produce a desktop app at all? Why aren't you doing this as a web page? Because the Mac has worldwide about 9% of desktops in the world. It's not foolish to think that someone has a Windows machine but an iPhone or has an iPad in addition to whatever it is they're using. And it really does diminish the reach of Apple News, which continues to be a developing and very exciting news product. by limiting it to, once again, you have to own something with an Apple logo on it in order to get your news from us. That's kind
of
silly.
And you have to live in one of the three original launch countries, because even though Apple could put Apple Music in 115 countries at launch, Google can put news in 127 countries, and Microsoft can put it in so many countries it can't count them all. We've still only got 4 years later, three countries for Apple News.
It's a much bigger problem. I think they'd have an even bigger problem like launching it in Turkey, say, and other countries. There are a lot of dimensions to this problem.
I'm kind of surprised that they haven't done some kind of playlist thing with news. My whole thing is that I articles that are longer than a little bit, I won't read the whole thing. I just go, oh, it's too many words. And so I just want them to read them to me. And so I go through like a little bit of a jumping jack thing to create audio files out of everybody's articles so I can listen to them while I'm working. I can't believe you just can't say, okay, I want these 10 articles, read them to me.
They used to do that.
There's that app I saw at Dub. The guy made an app. That's what I was talking about, where he went off to the island and then made an app to read to his kids. Yeah, now he's workflowed it.
Workflow.
No, I use Workflow for it, but I'm just saying I can't believe it's just not built into news where I just want to, like, let me just stack up a whole bunch of these
things. I bet you, with Siri suggestions, you could create a workflow.
I'm going to work on it.
You'd say, you know, hey, Shlomo, read me my top 10 stories.
Well, I don't, yeah, what
Wouldn't
I want
to. Wouldn't that be awesome?
I just want to be able to select them for a listen.
Oh, I see.
Like, I want to go through the news and just go, you listen, want to listen, select listen, them by listen, hand. Listen.
Yeah.
See, then I could get back to my my old NPR app without NPR, is I could just select the things.
The name for you, but there was that app at Dub where you basically just starts reading your Safari reading list to you. So you just say, I want, like,
I don't know what that app is, but I would love it.
Yeah, you just add it to your reading list.
Yeah.
We'll find it before the
end. I would also love news. Like, it took forever to come to the Mac. It's still not on Apple TV. Just give me all the videos from the news app and news for Apple TV. Just make it a system level service.
I think I think my problem for news is I really like news to be there. I don't like to monotask news. So I like to multitask news. So I like to listen to news while I'm doing something else. Like, I'm not really willing to spend a lot of dedicated time on it. So the idea of being able to convert it to audio means I can clean my office or do whatever while I'm absorbing information.
Why is Apple's AirPower wireless charger taking so long to make? Ask Mark Gurman.
Because it's hard.
But is it really hard?
Oh, yeah. It's hard.
I have multi-coil Qi charging pads that can do multiple devices. Oh, it's the watch?
If Apple Watch wasn't on there, it would be easier.
It's the watch.
Because the watch isn't really Qi. You can't just put it on a Qi charger.
So
and
that's what's making
it hard. You have to be able to charge the watch in any of those locations and the phone in any of those locations, which is multiple different kinds.
I get it. Yeah, because I've had pads for years. I had a pad that had four charging spots 5 years ago.
I think the fundamental problem is that Apple repeatedly is having this issue where we're going to announce something that is not going to take a long time. Like, it just you might they need, you know, and they're
Why
trying
are they
to
doing that.
Well, I think that they're trying to stay ahead of some market segments. Like, for instance, not announcing the speaker. Was going to continue to cede market share to Google and Amazon in a decision process, you know. And like, my kids don't, at this point, they have no idea how to talk to my Apple speaker, my HomePod, but they talk to Alexa constantly, don't they?
So what kind of charging is in the watch? It's not Qi charging? What is it?
It's similar. It has a Qi element, but it also has a magnetic element to it. You need both of those. And you also have to manage the current between an iPhone to quick charge it and something like an AirPods, which requires much less.
Right.
So they also have to
make an AirPods case.
Yes. The AirPods, as far as I know, that part is done. It's just making sure that the complexity of the underlying pads will do what they're supposed to do at the amount they're supposed to do it, regardless of where because it shouldn't be your problem where you put it. So regardless of where you place it.
Fire.
Yeah. Okay. And also, like, I think that for Alex's point, they wanted to get this out, but they also, I think, they wanted to show a multi-year commitment to Qi technology, because part of them coming on board was to evangelize it so that it would be in every Starbucks and every Uber. And that really hasn't worked out so great. So.
And to by the way, in IRC, Synapse said, you know, this is a non-problem. Do people really need wireless charging? I will admit that I wish that I could plug my watch in.
I use a lot of different phones. I use a lot of different phones, and I notice that I don't use the phones that don't wirelessly charge as much, because it's just more convenient for me to. I have wireless chargers at home in my home office, on my desk here in the studio, and when I'm next to my bed. I use those easels, so it's not an issue of placement. It's very quick and easy. I just put it on the easel, and for me, that's a really important feature in a phone. Yeah, maybe
it's also better security.
I don't think I'm alone in that.
if you go to a restaurant and all
you don't
the stuff
plug
is cheated,
in USB.
Yeah, you don't want to plug into an Uber if you're in a summer of the guy's Uber because you don't know where that like you don't want to. Like, but if you just put it down on the armrest and it starts charging, you put it down in the Starbucks and it starts charging.
That's
the
restaurant
table. Well, I will agree. I won't plug into any public USB connection.
Right. So you see the advantage, right? Now. Yeah. Maybe not at home.
Not at home.
But as you're walking around, if you could put stuff on tables and stuff and have it charge.
Yep.
Every bar, I don't know why every bar doesn't have this.
Because they don't want you staying.
Yes, they do. The more you stay, the more you drink. You've gone the wrong bars, my friend. What, do you go to Denny's?
You're gonna if you knew for a fact that after a 4-hour bender you would be able to call an Uber and leave your car behind, you would make it a 6-hour bender. So that's a good product. But when there was the first rumblings that Apple was going to go to wireless charging, my fear was that Apple would try to quote improve unquote wireless charging by coming up with their own standard. But it's sometimes the most important thing is to make this as dumb as possible so that someone can afford to have a $15 or $20 charging pad on their desk, another one like near their sofa, another one in the kitchen, so that no matter where they go when they set their phone down, they can actually be topping off their battery at that same time. So they're doing a lot of new things with this new charging pad that go beyond simply being a three-station charger, and that's part of what's getting this making problems. It's easy to get things working 90%. It's very hard to get something working 100%, as our earlier story about that keyboard kind of pointed out. So let's see if it pays off once they actually ship it. And
they're going to share it back with Qi, they said, whatever they add to this technology.
Good. Did you get your – have you stocked up on your modern buckles, Renee?
No, because they're for the 38mm. I have the 40.
Oh, they don't have modern buckles for the 42?
No. I don't understand why, because Apple is so good about being gender inclusive.
Oh, I didn't
and they
know
don't
that.
Have the ring, they don't have the loop for the 38, and they don't have the modern buckle for
well,
the 42.
Apparently, they're discontinuing the modern buckle.
Yeah.
So if you didn't get one, but I didn't realize it was 38 only. Oh, I just didn't buy it because it was too damn expensive.
Yeah.
When I saw $149, I didn't even look at what sizes. I just like, never mind. Let's see. Apple has ordered more series. Do we want to do the... I'm not going to do the 2019 rumors. I don't care about 2019 rumors, even if they come from Mark Gurman. It's 2019, folks.
Forget. There's no such thing as a 2019.
There's no such thing. There shouldn't be. Apple's ordered a series called Little America from Alan Yang, the stars of The Big Sick, and the office is Lee Eisenberg. This is actually great, of course, because Kumail Nanjiani has an immigrant experience. He talks about it a lot. The Big Sick was a lot about his Pakistani family and how they didn't want him to marry an American, et cetera, et cetera. These will be stories about the immigrants in America, and I think that's a great idea for a series. What we still don't know is where the hell these things are going to show up. So
TV.app.
That's Looking one more. TV.app. It's a long list of shows now that they've ordered. You think TV.app?
It does seem like they are leaning towards, you know, obviously tent poles, but it sounds like they're all, you know, and also things that are culturally rich, you know, whether it's Oprah or, you know, she's going to
Oprah's great. This one is going to be fantastic.
I think they're trying to do something that's more meaningful and not trying to shotgun, you know, they don't have to do that.
Less Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, also they know that they can't win with a strategy of let's fund the next Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones cost fortune to produce, and what if people just don't like it? Not everything is going to be a Westworld or a Walking Dead.
Almost the same as Apple's entire budget, just to acquire the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
not to produce it, just to buy the rights to it. So Apple does have to pick and choose. We only have a billion dollars to spend.
Also, I think their goal right now is not to challenge Netflix or Hulu or anybody like that, but to simply make the TV app a lot more credible as a destination. Like I was saying last week, I think that I feel as though a smart goal for them would be to make sure that instead of your landing page for Apple TV being this grid of icons in which TV has equanimity with every single thing else. It's just the place Apple TV is just the remote you pick up in order to navigate to Netflix. Now, when you launch the Apple TV, you'll get into the TV app that will have, here's all the exclusive stuff that we've got on Apple TV, and scroll, here's Netflix. And if you want to hold down and make it jiggle and then move the Netflix app someplace else, you can do that. But Netflix is a doorway off of this main hallway of original Apple content. Well, so they can afford to spend time developing a nice portfolio, because if they have a five-year plan, 5 years is a long time to acquire a really nice portfolio of at least 12 important series.
And I think that if they, with all the other advantages that they have, if they are able to incorporate this in with what you're already paying for Apple Music, I think that it becomes very competitive, you know, and difficult. You know, there's a lot of places there where they can, you know, keep on leveraging those two pieces together to add a lot of bang for your buck.
I don't know yet what the upshot of this is. Of course, we're in a trade war with China right now. In the past, the White House has said it's not going to affect the iPhone. On the other hand, when you want $250 billion in tariffs from China, it almost has to affect.
Nobody can guarantee. If you're going to say anything definitive about this, then I'm just going to assume you don't know what you're talking about. Because yeah. China does not. They do what they want to do.
Yeah.
There's no way you can guarantee anything.
So, I mean, this is that's $250 billion is half of all U.S. trade with China. But, so that means tariffs would affect a lot of things. Will iPhones cost more? I don't know.
I think a lot of people were wondering, you know, like, why is Tim Cook, you know, sitting in these round tables, you know. And why is he there? It's because you do not want to be left out of that conversation, yeah. Because that could be, you know, that's probably worth billions of dollars to Apple to be at least involved in the conversation. Doesn't even mean he has to agree with everything, but being willing to show up at the White House and having those conversations, I think, was probably useful. If he had just ignored him and ignored all those things, I guarantee the iPhone would be on the short list.
Well, yeah. And then we should also point out that moving iPhone production to the U.S. wouldn't necessarily solve the problem either, because components are also being tariffed. Exactly. Well, even if they could, the components are being tariffed. Yeah. So it wouldn't necessarily solve the problem.
Help, Leo, but I'm a national security threat, so I'm just going
to
say...
Well, basically, I'm coming to visit you to buy my next iPhone.
See?
If you guys would just stop with the softwoods...
Well, the irony is there people are talking about having to finish the production that was being done in the United States in China because
the Harley Davidson's moving to Europe. I don't want Bieber. I don't want Bieber. You can have him back. That's a good deal. That's a fair trade.
We're keeping Shatner.
We're keeping Shatner. You can keep Bieber.
Tough guy.
There's not much to say about that except that, you know, we'll continue to watch with interest because it could very well affect Apple's business dramatically. It's unknown.
Which ultimately will affect everybody. We tend to forget how this
affects everybody. It affects everybody. Yeah. And it may not happen at all because, you know, they may resolve the problem.
There was this old thing saying I forget it. I think it was China in the China Strait. You just never want two ships to come close together because someone might accidentally fire. It doesn't matter if they don't this time, but at some point it'll happen. So you just don't want these situations happening because at some point someone, intentionally or not, will slip on a trigger and then everybody is at war. So just keep away from all this stuff. Mm. Sorry.
You thought it'd be funny 11 years ago to shoplift that Zagnut bar from the 7-Eleven. Now that's your ability to do business in the United States, my friend.
Hey, but, you said TV.app with such confidence earlier when we were talking about content, Renee. Have you learned something that we should know?
No, I think Apple is just I think a lot of stuff with Apple, you know, like there are rumors, of course, and you hear things. But if you follow the short arc of their history, they do very rational, very sensible things. Often when you look back in hindsight, you go, yeah, you know, that was the best option for them to take. So I think a lot of times if you just look at what they can do with things, they will choose the most sensible thing to do with it. And I don't think they spent all this time building up TV.app and putting all the content and getting it all there to then try to hide Apple Media projects in some other
area. I agree.
I will just say that Disney has its own app, you know, coming out. It's its own streaming service that's coming out in 2019, which perfectly packages it up to be bought by Apple. And then they just take that app and
Star
put it
Wars
inside
show,
the TV
with
app.
The Marvel
and then
show.
Just, we're done.
DC has a streaming thing coming out, and everyone is going to have a streaming. Apple is going to have a magazine subscription, TV subscription, and music subscription. I want my bundles back.
Apple's the only company that could buy a company that would give them Marvel, Star Wars, Nat Geo, you know, like
Muppets.
The gamut of all the things that make sense for Apple would all be encased in one company, and you just kind of.
And then if they buy Lego, they will own my entire childhood.
I do admire Apple's. I think intelligent decision not to try to swallow giant companies because of the culture shock. I think that's really what's going on.
Exactly. And also the media consolidation is going to affect Apple and every other company. This is why Apple developing its own content is almost not only a smart move, it's almost a survival move, because whatever deal you make with whatever existing company, because you want to have access to their content library, they could be bought by another company soon that will simply say, we are no longer going to be offering this. The cable companies have an obligation to make sure that, I'm sorry, cable channels have an obligation to make their content available to other cable operators, even if they're owned themselves by a cable company. But those restrictions do not apply to streaming. So it would be possible for Disney, once they feel as though they have a good enough library of content, to simply say, guess what, no Disney or Disney affiliated product, service, property will ever be available on any other streaming service except for this new Disney service that we're opening right now. And so now, guess what, nobody has, unless Apple wants to buy Sony's content, and no one has bought Sony yet, Apple could be left with, we've got to have our own Game of Thrones, we have to produce our own movies. Not just because we want to have something that's unique to us, but because we want to have content, period.
I think there's no company that I know it's a huge thing, and I know it doesn't make any sense from the size perspective, but there is no company with content that makes more sense for Apple than Disney. The rest of them, when you look at all the other options they throw out there, you're like, wah.
But that's been true for a while, and the fact that Apple hasn't bought them yet kind of tells me
they would have to restructure they would have to do like an Alphabet style restructuring of their company in order to buy a company like Disney, because I don't think that company could possibly function as a vice presidency under Tim Cook or under any Apple CEO.
Could Alex run it? Could Apple just buy it and let Alex run it?
Yeah,
right.
That's a solution.
Now there is an
like
idea.
FileMaker, FileMaker, but Disney and Alex can run it.
Let's take a break. Your picks, gentlemen, fire them up. They're coming up next. Meanwhile, I'm glad we've got our Molecule fired up here in the studio. Molecule is a miracle for us. Anybody with allergies, anybody who's been sneezing, asthma, the Molecule is a breakthrough, really, air filtration system. It's capable of destroying air pollutants at the molecular level, hence the name Molecule. It was replacing something that's essentially 50 years old, the HEPA filter. Actually, more than 50 years old. People have been using HEPA filters since the 40s, but it doesn't do the job you want. The HEPA filter cannot capture and eliminate allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, even airborne chemicals. Only Molecule's PECO technology can. It's the photoelectrochemical oxidation, PECO. And it includes pollutants 1,000 times smaller than those a HEPA filter can catch. Funded by the EPA, tested by people like me and who love it, and verified by third parties in university labs like the University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense and the University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. Molecule makes it easier to cope with asthma and allergies, significantly reduces symptoms, kills odors. We have a Molecule in the studio. We put one in here because after the fires with all the smoke and then people do tar on the roof and then people painting, and pretty soon, but it smells good in here, right? And we got the Molecule at home. I got one for Lisa because she has allergies, and she stopped. It changed her life. She stopped waking up with headaches. It's also beautiful. It's like the Apple of air purifiers, a sleek aluminum shell. You can use it manually, of course, if you don't want to connect it to the internet. But if you do connect it to the internet, it will automatically order filters for you when you need them, which I really like. But you don't have to. Some people don't want to have another IoT device. It doesn't have to. It's not required at all. If it's got a button right on the top, you can turn it on. You can run it in silent mode. That's how we run it here in the studio. You can run it maximized boost mode that clears out smoke and gas and odors and even stuff you can't see almost instantaneously. It really is an amazing solution. If you're looking for an air filtration system that actually works, Molecule, you can get $75 off your first order if you go to MOLECULE.com and use the promo code MACBREAK. They have literally reinvented the air purifier. It destroys impurities in the air. I love it. Molecule.com, MOLECULE.com. And don't forget that offer code MACBREAK. because you'll save $75 and then they'll know you heard about it here on Mac Break. So it helps support the show. Thank you. Molecule.com. And they do have a money back guarantee if you're at all nervous about it. But I have to say, we like it so much we have three now. So I'm a believer. We have one in Michael's room, we have one in our bedroom, and then we have one here in the studio. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week, my friend.
So the app that wouldn't die, Pokemon Go, Leo, I'm going back to that again. They've put out another big update, and they've had another huge wave of engagement. So now you have you have friendship. So you can make friends with people, and then they will send you gifts. You can send them gifts. I'm going to open a gift right now.
Can I be friends with you, or does it have to be somebody nearby?
No, you can be, totally be friends with me. You open it up. I have to manage items now because I have too many things. I'll quickly delete something. Yay!
You haven't bought the giant backpack yet?
I did, and I'm still out of it'll give you a bunch of stuff, and it'll even give you eggs for Alolan Pokemon, which are essentially the Hawaiian Pokemon versions. So they have like different types. And also you can do trading now. So if I have a Pokemon you want, you have a Pokemon I want, as long as we're close enough together, we can trade those. And the further apart we caught them, the more we get for trading them. The new mechanics are friendship, gifting, and trading. And it's a lot of fun. They said they want to really increase the social. They want to make it the most social game ever, which, you know, is just typical hyperbole. But they're really executing on a bunch of interesting features, and they give you more stuff to do. And the greater your friendship level, the greater bonuses you get in attacking gyms or doing raids together. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm actually playing a lot more again. I know.
They keep sucking me in.
So what I'm waiting for, though, is there's rumors are going to do a player versus player mode. And I figured what better way to do that than AR Kit 2 with multiplayer, so you're all sharing the same view as your Pokemon are battling. And that would be a pretty really good tech demo for AR Kit 2.
Oh, I hope I catch this. Oh, I hope I catch
this. You can do it, Leo.
Oh, that damn Roselia broke free. Oh, I love that. I want that Roselia. Be my first catch of the day, and a brand new Pokemon too. I'm going to get all sorts of extra bonus points.
Yeah,
and but she's tough.
You could use a Great Ball or an Ultra Ball.
Should I use a little raspberry on her?
Yeah,
use a raspberry. Slow her down. Now she loves me. I don't like to use those fancy balls. There, I think I got her that time.
You might have.
So where's the friend stuff? Because I'd like to. So I could trade. I could, because you're far away. Yeah, that'd be good.
Oh, totally. Right? So if you go to I'll put up mine.
Look at that. 1,100 experience points, buddy.
If you tap on add friend, it gives you a unique number. That's mine. So anybody who types that number into their Pokemon can ask to be my friend. You have a right to refuse.
Wait a minute.
So
where do I do that? In the
you go friends. To your
friends.
Your
oh, I see. I don't have any friends. You're gonna be my first. Okay. Wait a minute. 9560-9081. 7039.
There you go.
Okay, I just sent you a request, Renee.
Okay. Well, I will approve it as soon as I get
it. And it said your name. And mine is 3068-5802-0079, and I'll approve anybody. Go ahead, show that so everybody could see it. I want to show it on the screen. There you go. Be my buddy.
You do have a limit of 200 friends. And the interesting thing, though, is they introduced this over the weekend. They started with level 40 players, and they went slowly down. Now you have to be level 10 or above. But their servers were crashing again. There were so many people coming back to play that it was taking, fun. Which is basically Google's engine, taking down all the servers again.
You could be my first friend.
Awesome. As soon as I get it, I will approve it.
Oh, but wait a minute.
Show it again, and I'll be your
friend,
too.
What team are you? Are you Valor?
Yeah, I am Valor.
All right. Voila!
My God, this is just like being on the playground with like regular Pokemon kid. When you get the one kid it's comes totally. Back from vacation with this big pile of, hey, can I play with your Pokemon cards?
I'm
going to
send you a gift, Leo.
Oh, he's going to send me a gift. You and Renee Ritchie are now friends.
The only
cry.
Thing that's terrible is they don't give you a way to search through your friends. So you got to scroll through them like some sort of monster.
Oh, and I'm starting to get new friend requests. I might be the most popular Pokemoner ever.
You might.
Yeah, four people have sent me requests. Except Shake and Puma. Except Cal Morgan. Except Liari. Except Double Dare. Those are all people watching live. Look at that. I have friends everywhere. Wait a minute.
Now tap on that. Yeah, there you go.
Renee sent me a gift. Open it up. Wow, Renee, you look powerful. You look like a very powerful
playing a little bit.
Player. Yeah. From the Jardin de Richemont.
Yes.
King's Rock. I don't know.
Oh, you got an evolution item. You can use that to evolve.
Ooh, and an egg. This is good stuff.
You got an Alolan egg, too. So you walk that 7 kilometers, you get one of those fancy Hawaiian Pokemon.
I do 7 kilometers in my sleep.
There you go.
Look at you. You've won 6,130. You've walked almost 3,000 kilometers.
You know, it started me because these 7K eggs were new. I ended up walking, I think, an hour and a half 2 days ago and an hour yesterday. And wow. I want to hatch all the new eggs. That's what I love, this motivation.
Renee has caught 44,525 Pokemon.
It's been a busy 2 years.
And he's got his own Ho-Oh. Nice. Yeah.
Shiny.
Shiny Ho-Oh. Oh. Which one are you? Are you one of these, Karsten?
No, I only got half your code.
Oh, let me show you my code again.
Yeah, show me your code.
Everybody should know my code. How do I do that again?
Just click the button.
Go to your add friend button.
The add friend. There you are. 3068-5802-0079. I'm sorry, we're slowing the show down.
No, this is the show, man. All right, I sent you a friend.
Alex Lindsay. You must have a pick of the week for us.
So I've had this issue. I have a lot of issues, but I have a specific issue, which is that I shoot stuff with my in portrait mode on my phone, yes, but I can't edit it on my computer. You can't. You don't have the full control of like changing all the depth of field and playing around with it and noodling
because
with it.
Vertical video should be banned from the world.
No. I'm just taking portrait.
Oh, portrait stills.
Stills, you know, like the portrait mode.
And you can't edit them?
There's not a lot of tools to do it very well. So I've been playing with this Anamorphic Pro, which does that. Oh. So basically it takes in, you can basically export your HEIC file. So you save that out as an original, and then you bring it in here, and it grabs onto that depth map. And now you can do all the things that you do with something like Focos, you know, which is that you can adjust the depth of field and play with it. You can also, it has a lot of like, you can play with brightness and exposure, and it has some presettings, and you can sharpen things in the foreground, and you know, there's a lot of other things that you can do with it. But it's a slick little app. It's, you know, not very expensive. I think it's like $30 or something like that. But it lets you, if it's something that you want to be able to do on your computer.
Ooh, that's neat.
After you can of course do this in something like Focos, but sometimes you have your computer open and you want to do it there. Now I'm kind of surprised you can't have all of these, both Focus's control as well as this control in Photo or in Photos, but since you can't, if this is something you feel is missing for you, this is the right app. So anyway, it's a cool.
And if you don't know what Alex just said, it's not for you.
It's not for you. If you're not worried about changing your depth of field based on
portrait mode. I don't know if this would help you, Alex, but in iOS 12, along with the depth data, they'll now also give you their segmentation map as an API.
As an API. But I'm just saying, if you want an app that lets you, if you want an app that lets you do the things that you want to do,
but you being you could now access. But you being you could now access the segmentation mat as well and do all your Alex things with it.
I'm the thought has crossed my mind, but I'm just saying that the this is the app that does it now.
Awesome! I just got 10 more friends.
I don't have any friends.
I now have 15 friends. Oh, I'm sorry.
That was it.
Andy Anako, pick of the week.
I don't need friends. I got my books, and because I'm home on Friday and Saturday night and Sunday night and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I can read with my friends in the Elfin Kingdom. Aren't you jealous?
Babar.
Him too. Sometimes there's an app that I've been using for a while but have been forgetting to recommend because I figure that everyone else knows about it. If a lot of people are not aware that their local public library will let you borrow ebooks and audiobooks, and furthermore, you don't have to like go to the library because these are electrons that can be sent to you over the information superhighway. And because libraries are absolutely awesome in every way, shape, or form, they really want people, if they've got a service, they want to make it as easy as possible for you to use that service. So you can just download essentially a Kindle app on your phone that will let you basically assign your local library card to this app and then sign out books and materials. It will stuff will land on your phone and it expires. But in the meantime, you get to read the entire book. The standard app used to be and still is OverDrive that most library systems were using. Last year, there was a much more accessible version by the makers of the same app called Libby. That is, it really does come across like a Kindle app or the iBooks app. It's very, very polished. It really is like a very standard, fun-looking book reading app that will run on Android. It'll run on iOS. In United States libraries, you can even use the iOS app to sign out a book, but then have it sent to your Kindle reader, and it will all just work fine. Some people have multiple library cards. Like they might have a library card for the town they live in, but they also have like a Boston Public Library library card, or they go to a college and they also have a college library card. Libby, one of its unique advantages is that you can consolidate all of those cards into this one app. And so all the books you've signed out everywhere are right here on this one device. And it's free. It's just there to help you use all the stuff that your library lets you use. And unlike its predecessor, or let's say its partner app, OverDrive, it really is more consumer oriented. OverDrive has always been a very good app. It's never come across like a hack or anything like that. But Libby feels more like when there is a startup that really wants to corner the market in book publishing and knows that it has to be as friendly as possible. Libby is the result, not OverDrive. So definitely download it. You might, one of the other nice features of Libby is that with many libraries, if you don't have a library card, you can even sign up for a library card automatically and not even, again, having no friends, I have no need to leave the house and challenge the giant Dayball. So you can, my local library doesn't, you will have to have an awkward conversation with a social interaction with somebody you don't know, but that's okay. Cause then once you get your library card and the number is punched into Libby, then you can go back to your house and never leave it again because you can just get this constant flow of books you never have to pay for, but to sign out. So definitely do it. If for no other reason that not only will it give you access to an immense library of really great content that you don't have to, you're already paying for by living and paying property taxes or taxes in your community, but also it might make you more aware of all the resources that your public library has. And they are fantastic. If you haven't stepped inside a public library in the past five years, you might not recognize it. And you might be kicking yourself that you have not been taking that 2-mile walk every now and then to just basically use this wonderful community resource. And Libby is one of the tools that will help you make the most of that resource. So I can't recommend it highly enough.
The San Rafael Library had a VR night, I think, or VR afternoon yesterday. I was like, wow, VR and the
library. We got to support our local libraries because they really are great resources. And of course, we all here don't really need libraries, and people watching probably don't. But there are a lot of people who don't have access to this kind of stuff, for whom a library is a vital resource. And so we really want to support our local libraries.
You should use it because even it doesn't matter who you are, they've got stuff that you can use. As a lot of them are using some of their conference spaces for maker spaces. They're acquiring like 3D printers. So if you want to learn 3D printing, they're good community centers. But you're absolutely right. When there are people who say that, oh, well, we should have less money for libraries because nobody reads books anymore, that's true. But I work a lot at my local libraries. Fortunately, it's only about a half mile walk away. It's one of the wonderful things about where I live. But every time I'm there, my favorite place to work is one of the tables that's sort of near where all the public PCs are. And whenever I pass by and I can see something on the screen, not that I'm looking, it's basically people who are looking for job assistance or looking for getting on government programs. They may not have a computer. They may not have internet access. They may not even have an actual fixed address. But if they can go to the library, they can still get their veterans benefits that they're completely entitled to. They can still figure out how to get a home loan with government assistance. They can figure out it's such an important community resource that it's one of the few statements that a stranger can make to me that will make me immediately judge them. If they're saying that I don't know why there are other libraries, or nobody, it's only for old people and they're already retired, they don't need a library anyway, why are we paying for it? I've actually heard people make statements like that, some people in government, as a matter of fact, and that's when I have to, that's what turns Mr. Hand into Mr. Fist pretty quickly, and I have to put it into Mr. Pocket.
And I think somehow libraries need to get to a point where they're community information centers. You know, rather than being thought of as a collection of books, you know, there's a lot of information that you can learn, interact with, and so on and so forth, as opposed to just being, I think most of us think of libraries. It's just a book.
That's what they are. They have resources. Every time they get money, they use them into creating more services and resources for the community. They're not buying bus ads, unfortunately. If more people, again, just basically make a list of, there's a list of things that you do every time you change the clocks forward or back, because it's a good way to remember it. Like, okay, I changed the clocks back, so I'm gonna change the batteries, my smoke alarm, I'm gonna clean the filters in my air conditioning system. I'm also going to visit my public library to see what's changed in the past 6 months, because chances
Howard Schultz, put a Starbucks in my library, you'll see a lot more of me.
There is a really wonderful coffee shop called the Newsfeed Cafe at the Boston Public Library.
It's the
huge renovation they did of this horrible brutalist extension they made to the beautiful McKim Building that was built in 1971. It looked as I was fond of saying, it looks like the place where in Eastern Europe you would go to beg a party official for any information about your dissident uncle who disappeared 6 days ago. It was that ugly and that intimidating, and they've turned the entire thing into it's still a library, but the entire first floor is like open space with Wi-Fi. Sit down, be comfortable, do work, get a coffee, get a cookie. You can't take the coffee and the cookie anywhere you want, but you can take it into a lot of places. It's also where the radio studio that I occasionally do public radio in is.
That's beautiful. Visit your library. I've seen the pictures you've posted. That's a beautiful, that's a great studio. You may have noticed I have a little buddy on my on my computer.
Look at the little
friend just joined us.
Look at
him. Isn't he cute? Look at this. I could tear his arms right off. No.
Monster.
This is Alex Gumpel's pick of the week, and I have to say, I am all for it. This is Classic Bot, designer toy figures in geek culture. Look at this. This is the collection of Classic Bot toys that you can add, the Trash Bot and Friends. wow. Is this cool? Feel free to open it, he says. Well, I don't know. I don't want to ruin the collectible value of this.
It is mint in box, Leo.
I will show you the website, classicbot.com, a toy and lifestyle brand for anyone with a passion for classic computer designs. Mail, error, trash, folder, and disc icons brought to life. He's carrying a little briefcase with the font briefcase in it. This is so cool. Oh, created by a Hong Kong startup founded by Philip Lee. It's called Play Some Toys. And I guess if you go to the shop, you can pick some up right now. $32 for the Trash Bot and Friend playset. But I really think you need the Classic Bot Classic for $27. And now you're really set. Alex is already ordering it. Good job. Alex Gumpel has come up with a pick of the week. Completely bendable. And I think, you know, the way it's set up so that it sits right on your computer, the edge of your computer, I think is really cool. That's a good design. Classicbot.com.
It's pretty.
Isn't that cute? Mm-hmm. It's a Mac classic.
Breaking news, Leo. We're now good friends. We're one heart good friends.
I know. How did that happen?
Because we exchange gifts.
I love you. I would give you more stuff, Renee, but I don't have anything.
And the thing is, you only have to do one thing a day. So you can alternate, or you can do a raid together, or you can attack a gym together.
I have to say, I haven't played Pokemon Go in a long time, and they have added a lot of features. Features they had talked about adding in the beginning, things like trading stuff. And I'm just thrilled. I am, and a lot more playability. So I think I'm going to pick it up again, too. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I played it in Japan. I was hoping there'd be some interesting stuff to
high capture. Density places are fun.
Yeah. Oh, really fun, because you could stand in one spot and just raid like.
What they
crazy.
Do also now is they have a community day. So for 3 hours once a month, they pick a Pokemon Charmander, or the last one was Larvitar, and they just spawn everywhere, and you catch shinies, and you go out in groups of people.
They also now give you a weather forecast, and some Pokemon types are stronger, appear more frequently, and give bonus stardust when caught, depending on the weather forecast.
And the weather effects are gorgeous. Like, I had snow for 6 months in the game, and it was gorgeous.
I don't know
and
gorgeous
the rain
that is
amazing. The rain looks really good.
Yeah, this is really, I almost want to say it's a shame they didn't do this right away. I understand why they didn't. They barely could keep the thing afloat. But I hope people do take a look at Pokemon and Go again, because that's pretty cool. Lisa was mad at me when I launched it in Japan. She said, let's not get into that again.
Sorry, Lisa.
But it was fun. It was really fun. All right. Hey, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to Alex Gumpel for my pick of the week. I was actually going to talk about Firefox 61, but that's kind of dull. Firefox now has is going to have data from Have I Been Pwned and 1Password incorporated into it to help you detect risky sites maybe where your password's been leaked, things like that. So, and I've started using it on the Mac, and it's really nice. Maybe a good alternative to Chrome. I'm still going to probably depend on Safari more than anything else, but the new Firefox is great. They've really, I think, made a nice open-source project.
I had moved away from Safari for a long time, and now I find myself using it.
Well, I think Apple wants it to be your choice, and I think that they're making it better and better in order to do that.
I use it on my laptop because it really does help battery life so much.
Right. Yep. Actually, there's no reason not to use it on your laptop. But on your desktop, you might want to have more than one choice. You know why I have three browsers on my – I shouldn't admit this. But Bloomberg only gives me 10 pages a month per browser. So now I get 30.
Right.
30 Mark Gurmans. Once a day, I can look at
Bloomberg. You're not using Opera?
Oh, that's 40.
See, there's 40. See, I got this model.
You can tell how scared I am about being tracked for the information I'm looking for by what browser I use. My normal one is Chrome. I'll use Safari because I'm concerned about like marketing people's has a little bit more security, but still the same browser. And then I have Tor browser, which is I'm just curious about how much this house that I just backed by might be selling for. I don't want to be on some list of people who are shopping for houses, no matter what happens. Yeah, so that's why I have multiple browsers.
I think Firefox actually is good for anti-tracking as well. I think they've got a very good story.
They're all getting better. It's nice.
Yeah, they all are. Yeah. Hey, what a fun show. Thank you, everybody. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Don't forget the Vector podcast. He's got more coming today, probably.
I have a 40-minute video on iOS 12 if anyone wants a deep
dive.
How
did I know? You know what? You've become, literally, I'm not kidding, Renee, one of the top resources for me in keeping up on iOS and Macintosh. iMore is fantastic for this. You guys do such a good job. iMore.com. It should be absolutely on your start page. Thank you, Renee. Andy Inatko, INATKO, at Inatko on the Twitter.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm also going to be speaking on public radio. I'm going to be on Boston WGBH radio again on Thursday from 11:30 to about noon, probably talking muchly about not just the usual policy stuff, but I want to talk about the new iOS and the new macOS as well. So fantastic. You can hear me blather on a little bit more there.
Well, there you go. Yet another resource for all your new Mac news. And, of course, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Best way to keep in touch with Alex is follow him on Twitter at AlexLindsay.
And I'm producing a successful live stream at Inspire on Thursday. I'll be at the Union Square Ballroom, I guess, in New York in the afternoon. It's free, 2 hours.
That sounds great.
Being put on by Adorama. So anyway, you can sign up for that kind of thing. There's the link for it on the Twitter.
So. On the Twitter. It's an Eventbrite. All right. AlexLindsay. We do Mac Break Weekly right after iOS today. Make it your all Apple Tuesday, around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by and listen to the show as we produce it, you can also get on demand versions of the show after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or pick up your favorite podcasting appliance and download it. You can subscribe, and that way you'll get it every week. Or listen to it. It's on Google Home, Amazon's Echo. So you can even say, what is this? What is the Shlomo command? Is it, hey, Shlomo, listen to Mac Break Weekly? I bet it is. I bet. Try it.
Play Mac Break Weekly.
Play Mac Break Weekly. I bet it is. And you'll get the latest episode. Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening or watching. We appreciate your being here, and we'll see you next time. But got to say, time to get back to work because break time is over. Take your little Mac with you. Whoa, I broke his arm off. Aw, isn't that cute?
Next time it's us, Andy. Behave.
I'll break your arm off. And
that's yours. Fine.